Start our meeting here. I want to welcome everybody to council chambers tonight for our July city council meeting. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm opening the meeting at 5:30 p.m. First item on our agenda is our invocation. I'd like to ask Councilman Whitby if you wouldn't mind leading us in prayer this evening.
I would. Pray with me, please. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the city of Woodway. Thank you for the opportunity for all of us up here to serve. God, I pray that we would honor that. God, I pray that you would bless those in South Texas that are affected by the flood, the tragedy. God, I pray that you would bless their families, bless the victims of those that tragedy. God, I pray that you would just keep them in our memories. Lord, I pray that you would let us do good work tonight. We love you and praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen. Thank you, Mr. Whitby. At this time, if you're able, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number three is our public comment time we're moving into. The City Council invites citizens to address the Council on any matter, including items that are on the agenda, except for public hearings. Those will have their separate hearing time later on. We ask that you please limit your comments to 3 minutes per resolution R87-11. There's a timer up here on the screen behind us that'll show you how much time you have left. The council is not permitted to take any action or discuss any item that's not listed on the agenda this evening. When you're called to speak, we ask that you please state your name and your address. And if you're speaking on a specific agenda item, we ask that you please state that item before beginning your comments. Thank you so much for your understanding and your cooperation. The podium is open for anybody who would like to address council at this time. Thank you.
Yes, hello, ma'am. Erica Beverly, 708 Arliss Drive, Woodway. Mayor, councilmen and women, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. I think it was the end of May, maybe June, I came in talking about water lines. That is still an issue. But before I get into that, because that is partly on the agenda, there was something on the agenda that raised some questions, which is the executive session with our attorney. It has vague language on advice on a matter, and you may discuss it during that executive session time as we go through the agenda, but we think I'd like to talk on everyone's behalf. We would like to know what that kind of more is, not asking what the... not asking specific natures, you know, we don't want to cross any lines, but just in general, as code 551.071 talks, general natures of legal issues and to avoid vague language, which is in, what's in here. So just as we get there, I ask that we talk a little bit more about what that topic may be that we're holding in closed session. But going directly to the annual budget, which is number 13 and 14, I would like to bring up the water again. That week, and Mayor, thank you very much for your follow-up email. I just was out of the state and away from email, so I wasn't able to respond, so thank you for that. I want to acknowledge that you sent an email after I spoke last time. But that week following that meeting, this is what came out of my water lines that was supposedly repaired, that was running, causing allergy down our street, because it was running for over a month. This is what was there. It is still currently unfixed. When I was gone, when I left, I had no water meter, nor did my neighbor have a water meter. Her water meter has been returned, and I still do not have a water meter. I do need to go through my water bills, because they are automatically withdrawn, to see if I do have a water bill, because my question would be, how am I being charged for water that is not being metered? That is a concern and an issue. Last time I spoke, what I knew of is that we had a $400,000 budget that is a two-year out rotation of which streets will be repaired every year. So if my street is identified this year to be a street that is fixed, it won't be fixed for another 2 years. Again, it's been a minute since I've been up here, so I might be a little off on that timeline, but that's essentially what we're looking at. Water and sewer, which during that meeting we talked about sewer, is main human rights that we have, and this is a glorious, wonderful city that we have, but I truly believe that the budget is misaligned with recreation. We have the bike lane. We have the controversy with the recreation centers. I just really think that things are really misaligned, and we need to have a huge discussion with our constituents and with whoever. I'm not a city official. Whoever runs those budgets, something is wrong. And that's all I have. My 3 minutes is up. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if anybody wants to see this, I can pass it.
Anybody else? Anybody else, please? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Courtney Rogers, and I'm here to address some concerns that were brought up about my home and the business that I run for my home in the last couple meetings. So I live at 13749 Harbor Drive, and I have a swim school. We teach kids from 6 months and up how to swim. And so just wanted to, first of all, just to say, I know that there have been some comments about the city's response related to people parking in front of the fire hydrant at my house, things like that. And just to give you all a perspective into kind of how I've seen it is, I have really noticed that the city, I've talked to the police chief, I've gotten to know the police chief and the police officers more than I thought I would like to before, but they really have, I think that they've just operated with so much clarity, and they've really done their job well, I would say, where they have not relaxed the rules. They've followed those, but they've done it with awareness of the intent of the law and awareness of people and respect for people. So I just wanted to thank you, just thank the whole city and especially the police department for your response in that. And I'm so sorry that I've taken y'all's time because I'm sorry about that. Also, thank you for painting. I wish I'd thought about it before, but painting the curb around it. So thank you. And then also just to let you guys know, some of the good, that is going on in our city. I've been teaching, you guys issued a permit for my home about 5 years ago. And I've gotten to teach a lot of kids since then. And just want to share some cool stories of good things that are happening in kids' lives that are being impacted. And thank you all for letting me run this small business from my home. It impacts me and my family, but also our community. There's a little girl named Chloe, she's about 2.5 years old. She fell into the pool in the winter, unnoticed by her parents. A vehicle, a little ride-on car accidentally fell into the pool. And she was able, because she had learned to roll and float, and she started screaming for help. And it got her little cousin's attention. Cousin called the mom over, and they were able to save her. This girl would not have lived if it had not been, that she knew how to roll and float and get to the side safely. And then even just another story, a little girl who's in my daughter's preschool class. She saw her little brother jump into the pool while mom and dad were trying to get everybody sunscreened up and all ready to go. And then she saw her little brother jump into the pool, and she was like, "Mom, Dad, help, 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 help." And they were able to go and get him totally unhurt. So it really is just making an impact. And we're also trying to provide a lot of water safety education to our parents, just to prevent, there are so many pools in Woodway, so much access to water in the city of Waco, and so we are really grateful for you guys, and also just want to thank you. I know that this is not an easy job that you all have, and we've lived in, thank you.
Yeah.
So thanks so much. We appreciate y'all.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Lindsay, and I live here in Woodway. I was just thinking about this when you were sharing your story. The last time I came and spoke, it was in regards to the COLA for our officers. And as fate would have it, my garage caught on fire 3 weeks after that meeting. Actually walked into the fire, texted my husband, said, fire garage help. He called 911. They were at my house in less than a minute. And Chief himself said we would have lost our house had there been more than 5 minutes that had passed from then. So thank you for saving my entire house. I had my kids there, and I'm just so grateful for the Woodway Public Safety Department. I am here in regards to the Woodway Family Center, just maybe about programming a little bit. I love the center. I love what they're doing. My neighborhood is really active at the Woodway Family Center, especially during the senior hours. They try to go every day, and I've been invited several times by them. I have attempted to attend a couple of things during the 55 and better hours. As a teacher, I was actually teaching on one of the topics being taught, but because I'm not 55, was just recommended that maybe that program wasn't for me. And so I would just like to request and ask that instead of pursuing outside individuals 55 and up, to first let the citizens of Woodway and the taxpayers have an opportunity to use those resources. Of course, I do not want to take anything away from our 55 and up citizens. If they are full at capacity, I would love for them to first have the opportunity. But if there are empty seats, there are opportunities, I would just ask that it go to the 18 and up citizens before recruiting outside individuals from Waco, Lorena, Hewitt, etc. I want to learn how to play Mahjong. It's like the new thing. And I keep seeing it on the calendar and like, I want to do that. And my neighbors keep asking me, and I keep saying, no, I can't, I'm not 55. So that's just my simple ask, is that maybe it start with 55 and better, and then, or, you know, have days Monday, Wednesday, Friday when it's 55 and better, and 18 and up Woodway citizens, and then offer it to outside communities so that our taxpayers are not leaving the city of Woodway unnecessarily. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Next, please. Anybody else?
Nobody wants to talk. I'm sure you have a lot in your mind.
Yes, ma'am. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Phoebus Cavanaugh. I've been here before, so I know the drill. This is about your possible, this is going to be about the discussion that you're going to go through with the Woodway Family Center. And the last time I was here was the meeting regarding, oh my goodness, I'm having a senior moment. But anyway, I just want you guys to think about leaving the Woodway Family Center open. And the last meeting we had only one person that said yes to tearing it down. And most of the people that came was against it. And it's just a perfectly good building. There is no point of tearing it down and spending more money to build another one. And I just want you all to know that let us be good steward of the community's money and save that money for infrastructure, water, improving a lot of the other parks. And that's all I'm asking. The pickleball courts, the programs are wonderful, and I really appreciate it. Thank you all for your service.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Patty Gooch, 1249 Woodland West Drive. The issue I want to talk about is the old family center. But first, let me say I love the new family center. It's wonderful. The people there are doing an excellent job of programming and for 55 and up. But I agree with probably the lady that just spoke that a lot of other people want to use it too. And just like today, I was there for pickleball. I was there 2.5 hours. I only got to play 4 games because it was so crowded. Came back at 1 o'clock to play Mahjong. And every table was full, which was an increase over the first time they did it last week. So they're doing such a good job of programming. People are coming and supporting. And I just feel like very, very shortly, we're going to need some more space in the old building. And I don't think it's going to, I know it's not quite up to ADA regulations in every way, but I just hope that y'all will consider and listen to us where we felt like the Parks and Rec people did not listen to all the people that were speaking last time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else, please?
Well, a couple of years ago, I stood up here and...
If we get your name,
please. Oh, I'm sorry. Jim Ann Heather, West Lane Circle.
Thank you.
I stood up here and advocated for a senior center. And that was before the new family center was open. And I just have to say that Jimmy has done a wonderful job with the activities and everything. And I can understand wanting to expand the age group. I can really understand that. And, you know, if we limit it to our residents and not to outside people, that could probably be expanded. But I also want to say that the Parks and Recreation Committee did not listen to the citizens, or the council may not listen to the citizens. I want to point out that this last election, this May 3rd election, was actually had two issues. Who would be mayor, who would be elected mayor, and whether or not the old family center would be demolished. Over 900 people were very informed. They knew what they were voting for, and they voted for these candidates, Corzall, Gilman, and Whitby, to be elected, knowing that that election meant that the family center would be demolished. So the citizens of Woodway, when they voted, they voted their preference. So they have been heard, in my opinion, even though they have not attended this council meeting. And I understand being sentimental. I cried when my dad's house burned, but I was really happy when I went, we turned the property over to Habitat, and I was really happy when we went to a dedication for that house on that property. So to demolish the old family center is one thing, but there could be other things put in that to benefit our youth. And so I just want to say that I appreciate all the work that the council does, and I just think that it's time for our tax dollars to not support two centers.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. All right. There being no one else, we'll close the public hearing. Got one more? Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
Myra Aubenshine, live on Midway Drive.
Yes, ma'am.
The problem with demolishing the family center would be against everything that the deed stated that we agreed to on the deed. The council, when they took the deed and they signed it, they agreed that they wouldn't demolish it and they would keep it with the same use that it was intended for, and that was for the use for the citizens. I think that you should listen to what the citizens want and vote accordingly. The hours for the new family center is 8 to 5. A lot of us work. I've never been in the new family center. I work from 8 to 5 on Monday through Friday, which is fine. But I think that from what I'm hearing, it's pretty crowded, and people are not getting to benefit from the use of the programs that you do offer. If you tear down the family center, I think that you're not only not upholding your promise that you made when you signed that deed, but I also don't think you're doing a justice to the city, the citizens of this community. When the deeds were signed from the Woodway Boys Club to the Woodway Family Center, both entities were defunct. So I'm not certain how that makes it a valid deed to begin with. So I think that legally that the property is probably still in the name of the Woodway Boys Club. You'd have to ask an attorney. Nonetheless, the restrictions on those deeds say that you have to keep it for the use of the citizens. And I think that's where it should stay.
All right. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Susan Richards, 3913 Old Mill Road, and I'm here to represent my father tonight, Newman Copeland. He and John Bowden gave that property to the Waco Boys Club back in 1971, and there was a deed restriction put in at that time that if the property was not used for the youth and for the boys and the community, that the property would revert back to the grantors, and that's Newman Copeland and John Bowden. Now, my dad's 98 years old, so I guess everybody thought he was dead, but he's not dead yet, and he's pretty with it. It was real important to him when he gave this. He went to work full-time when he was 13 years old, and so when he gave this, he always told us, I want to do something so the youth can come and have a place to play, a supervised place, and have an opportunity that I didn't have as a young person. So that was very important to him. And we're not wanting the property back. We want the property used with the intention that it was given. Now, I've had several attorneys look at it, and if it is torn down, then we will pursue the integrity of the deed. When I went to the Parks and Recreation meeting, it was represented that they weren't aware of the deed. Well, personally, if I had an attorney doing this and he wasn't aware of what the deed was, I don't believe I'd be interested in keeping that attorney. The other thing is, everyone at that meeting except for one spoke in favor of keeping that building. And I was really surprised that they weren't even listened to. It was like they shouldn't have even shown up to speak. I think Woodway is a wonderful community. I live in Waco. But from some of the things I've heard going on about this, I think that y'all are not representing the people the way that they need to be. And I've just been really disturbed about this. The other thing, when I went to that meeting, I made it specific that no one had even tried to contact my father. And that was at the Parks and Recreation meeting. And no one has still had the decency to try to contact him. And I think it's a shame that that's the way y'all have conducted this.
Yes, ma'am.
Dolly Sanders, 15026 Badger Ranch Boulevard. I just wanted to add something about the family center. It is getting more and more crowded. I'm 82, and I was playing pickleball today, and it has given me a lot of added years to my life. I don't know. And so I think it has been a wonderful opportunity. And with it getting so crowded and people that are younger than 55 needing the opportunity too, I think we need more space. And I do not like to see it torn down. So I am just coming up here to say I vote for keeping it there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Shoot, my knee's bad. Victor Fowler. I live at 360 Broughton Drive. And I was a kid and didn't help do the fundraiser for the Woodway Center. And I just feel like it's part of Woodway, and every time I walk by and I'm like, wow, it's not an ugly building, it looks pretty nice. And I just don't think I think there's water issues and bigger things that need to be money spent on than to spend the money and tear down a perfectly good building that people have already admitted the bathrooms are better than the new center, the air conditioner kicks butt. It looks like we could keep that as part of Woodway. It was part of Woodway, you know, and the high school was here and the Woodway Elementary and back in the early 70s. They have overcrowding issues. I think there could be a purpose for it and be still a part of Woodway, you know, as an overflow or for help alleviate some of the other overcrowding. But I just think it's awful to take a building like that this day and age and just wreck it and tear it down because it's so functional. I don't think it's the smart thing to do. I think we need to use that money for water and more important things.
Anybody else, please?
My name is Linda McGregor, 407 Shadow Mountain. My concern is really the purpose of the property. If it is voted that you keep the family center, then is there a specific purpose for its use if it's kept? Some have been mentioned a senior center an annexed to the existing family center. If it is voted that you tear it down, is there also a specific purpose for that? Do you need another ball field, outdoor pickleball courts, more parking? Is there a purpose for the tearing down of the building that can be stated so that people know that the reason you voted the way you did or the way you will is because you have a stated reason for the use of that property? And that kind of is my concern, is a lot of things have been thrown around, but what is the purpose either way for that property?
Hello, I'm Lori Fowler at 360 Broughton. I've lived here all my life, except maybe 15 years. At the Park and Rec meeting that others have referred to, it truly felt like we just were not heard. Everyone here was against tearing down the family center, and they turned around and said, yeah, we're going to recommend we demolish it. Okay. Well, I mean, there were a lot of people here, and there were at least 30 people who spoke that night. One wanted to have it torn down. Everyone else said, let's keep it. It feels like that night, it didn't matter what we said, they're going to tear it down, come hell or high water. And I hope that tonight you will listen to what, you know, what you're supposed to represent us. And that night, we were actually told by one of the board members that, well, you could sit here too, and you could get what you want. Well, that's not your job to get what you want. It's to represent the citizens, and that's why there's different wards, and you have your group to represent. And I mean, you hear what we're saying, so I hope that you will listen and vote that direction and keep the family center. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Jan Smith. I live on Panther Drive. I'm talking about the whole family center. When I came to the Park and Rec's committee meeting, I gave an analogy of 2 years ago, the first city council meeting in September, there were several complaining that the city were preventing them from using the family center, Bell Family Center. And I thought, that's terrible. It must be locked up. Must be the lights turned off. So the next day, I went, and it was fully staffed. Lights were on, no problem. I went every day that month, and no senior adults ever came. I asked the director, how long has it been since a group came to the old family center? And he said, it's been 3 years. And so I said, can I come next month? So every day of October, I came. Not one group or anyone came to play pickleball, to have a potluck dinner, to have socialize, play games, whatever. And so I went in November every day. And then 2 weeks in December. So almost 4 years then, there had been no action brought or done at the family center for senior adults. They didn't come. They didn't involve themselves. They didn't even engage themselves there. I just wanted to say, if you decide, yes, we have to keep it, The Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which is the TDLR, will be on your doorstep. They will do a building inspection. They will inspect the inside of the building. They'll inspect the outside of the building. I work for the state of Texas. I know how they do. You don't have to tell them. They'll be there. They will also inspect the parking lot. They will give you a list of how to update that building and bring it up to code. Not your choice. They will be there. It could be $1 million total balance for you to pay before one senior adult even darkens the door. So what the problem is the expense, what expense is it going to be to the city to keep the building, to staff the building, and to bring it up to code before you use the building? And also, who's to say in a couple of years that it goes right back the way it was that year, 2 years ago, for 4 years when no one used it? I wanted to bring that and also recommend, there's a lot of great activities at the New Family Center, and I would recommend these people to join a group, engage themselves, and enjoy it and be happy. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else?
Charles Anderson, 11011 Denali Drive. I'm going to change topics here a little bit and talk about just the financial report from that was published last year. I'm looking at the September 2024 report that on the page that's management discussion and analysis continued. It's the one with the fancy blue cylinder bar graph on it. And on that report, I see here that it says, at the same time, in the second paragraph, at the same time, total expenses, flip it this way, total expenses increased by $1.782 million, or 21%, primarily due to operational challenges faced during the year caused by wells being down and the need to purchase more water from the city of Waco. A significant factor contributing to the rise in expenses was the temporary shutdown of multiple water wells for repairs, which required the city to purchase additional water to meet demand. And it goes on to talk about the unplanned cost. I'd like to see the city and their maintenance department investigate predictive maintenance to determine if those well pumps can be analyzed with signals of their amperage and temperature and sound and vibration, just to determine in advance if they're going to fail and have the parts or the pumps needed to have those in advance so we don't have to go outside and purchase more expensive water. That's a huge expense to the city, $1.7 million. And if that's the significant and primary cause of that, I'd like to see the city's maintenance department and water department invest more significantly in determining if those kinds of failures can be dealt with in advance and not have long outages. So that's what I came here to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else, please? Yes, sir.
Richard Maker, I live on Harbor. Last month, I received a letter because I wrote TCEQ. It's unacceptable that Woodway had 8,200 gallons of sewage. Sewage exposed to the Woodway citizens. I think if you've got your finances better, that you would get the sewer system taken care of. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Carla Grisham. I live at 304 West Lane Circle since 1993. Just because some of us have not spoken does not mean we are for keeping the facility of the old family center. We may be back here, but just because we haven't spoken, for keeping it does not mean we are for keeping it. And I just want you to know there's a lot more for not keeping it than are here tonight. So possibly we need to put it before a city vote, actually, let the people vote, not just the ones that are here tonight, but everyone. And I do want to say thank you, Amin, for serving at this particular time. We appreciate you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else, please? Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Dwayne Moss. I live on Forest Oak Circle. And I simply, again, I want to thank you for serving. There's been a lot of missteps and whatever on this project, and that doesn't really matter. Where we are is where we are. And whoever came up with the idea of the family center was right. It needed to be bigger. And money kept us from making it bigger. And we've got an answer. We got a building next door that can be used. I can see Big Green and Little Green down there. I can see pickleball court tournaments. I can see volleyball tournaments where you need all of those gyms. We make it a big deal that we have something. I still remember when the question was asked, is the building structurally sound? And the answer was yes. Then why would you get rid of it? You know, there's a lot of great memories in that building, but there's a lot more to come. And I just, let's don't make it a political thing. And if you want to get into the money, we've had enough surplus money in the last several years to take care of anything that would cost. So, my phone rings off the wall, and they are people wanting to keep it. And I think it's it. I don't want it to be a senior facility or a juvenile facility. I want it to be for anybody that we can have to use it. I've heard great comments about what's been done with the new facility. But why can't we do that with the other facility too? Like I said, whoever made the decision long ago to build this did not intend for that building to be that size. And if it hadn't come in at that cost, it wouldn't have been that size. I don't know if that was the right decision or not, but it doesn't matter. It's done. And in my opinion, we keep the building and we find a way to use it. We make it pretty and we continue the good life that we enjoy in Woodway, Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Anybody else, please? All right, there being no one else, I'll close the public comments at 6:08 p.m. Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to item number four. That's the presentation of the Yard of the Month for July. Chief, do we have this award recipient here with us tonight?
I do not believe so, sir.
All right, so is it the Geigers? Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so this is the home of Kathleen and Scott Geiger on Clarence. And I think everybody can see why they won Yard of the Month this month. Congratulations. Mr. and Mrs. Geiger, we're going to get you this Yard of the Month award delivered to you. Thank you for your outstanding contribution to help make the city of Woodway beautiful. Chief, we'll get this to them, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. Item number five, presentation of the Municipal Clerk's Office Achievement of Excellence Award. Mr. Manager, number five, please.
All right, we have a guest visitor tonight. That's Bobby Jo Taylor. She is the City Secretary for the City of Alvarado. Come out here to be with us tonight. Thank you for coming out. Ms. Taylor has served Texas cities for more than 27 years. She holds the designations of Texas Registered Municipal Clerk, as well as the Master Municipal Clerk designation. Ms. Taylor has also served 3 years as a trustee for the Texas Municipal Clerks Association and many years as an officer for the Yellow Rose chapter of TMCA.
Thank you very much for that introduction. I appreciate it. It's truly an honor to be here with everyone tonight. I'm usually on that side, this side scares me a little. So just bear with me. I'm very honored to be here and to present this award to my colleague, Ms. Donna Barkley. This award is the Municipal Clerk's Office of Achievement of Excellence Award. It's a very wordy award. This distinguished award is bestowed only on Texas cities that meet 12 different criteria each year. And these criteria are record management, professional development, government transparency, elections, awards, recognitions, Open Meetings Act, Public Information Act, and more. To qualify, a city secretary, like I said, must be 9 of the 12. And it's no small feat. Only 45 of the 1,225 incorporated municipalities in Texas were chosen this year. This recognition not only highlights the exceptional performance of Ms. Barkley, but also reflects a shared commitment to excellence by the City of Woodway's leadership staff, the City Council, on behalf of your citizens, is a true testament of teamwork, integrity, and a unified vision for outstanding public service. After all, that's why we're here today, right? We're all public servants. So on behalf of the Texas Municipal Clerks Association, it's my great privilege and honor to present the Municipal Clerk's Office Achievement of Excellence Awards to the City of Woodway, Texas, and to Texas Municipal Registered Clerk, Ms. Donna Barkley.
Donna, I know I speak on behalf of myself and many others. We're so grateful for your many years of amazing service to our city. You are just one of the best people that we could have on our staff here, and we're just so grateful. And you bring us a lot of honor, a lot of pride, and thank you for everything that you do. I know you don't get thanked nearly as much as you should, but it's just an honor to have you on our team, and we're so blessed to have you. So congrats again.
Appreciate it.
Yes. I can give these out all day. I like these. Introduction of new public safety officers, number 6. Over to you, Chief.
All right. Thank you, Mayor, Council. I wanted to continue our tradition of introducing our new officers for our community so they have a face with who they are serving, the accountability associated with that. Seth Robinson, if you don't mind coming over here, I have a little introduction for Mr. Robinson. Mr. Robinson is a certified paramedic. Forgive me for turning. Mr. Robinson is a certified paramedic, recently graduated from the police academy of 20-plus cadets from every major city and small municipality in this area, and he was valedictorian of the class and was also named top shot, exhibiting most accuracy with his sidearm of any other cadet as well. So you got brains and bronze. So we're very, very proud of him for doing that. And he's humble, didn't mention it. Of course, the director calls me. The director also called me, I don't know if you know this, and told me that he scored higher on his state licensing exam than any other cadet he has ever seen in his entire career. Kind of cool.
I went through that same academy, so I was a little offended, but whatever. No, but he holds a bachelor's of science degree from Hardin-Simmons, and a real, overall, above all, real honorable, God-fearing man who practices out there what he preaches. I've seen him personally already do great. We've gotten commendations, as you've seen on our Facebook already, on him. So he is he's an up-and-comer. We're really happy to have you. If you don't mind saying just a few words.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Chief. And thank you, council members and citizens. It's nice to meet the people that it's now my job to protect and serve. So this coming to Woodway represents a little bit of a return to my roots. I actually lived on Harbor until I was 5, and then moved out to Bosque County and grew up out there. So while working EMS in McLennan County, always thought that of all the law enforcement agencies, I was subject to working alongside the Woodway guys were the best. And so when I thought I want to try my hat at policing and fire, ultimately, that this would be the place to do if I could, and I'm happy to say that I'm here now.
We're honored to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I would love to. Yes. Oh, thank you.
Item 7 is the quarterly presentation from the Public Safety Department. Welcome, by the way. We're so happy to have you. Thank you.
Thanks. Seth, you ready?
Sure.
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I love it, though. I love it. That's
you're
what,
up.
That's what we want to
you
see.
You didn't tell him he was
always
here.
Ready. I love it. I'm in. I love it. All right, so we're going to go over the quarterlies real quick. Wanted to go over a few pictures from. One of them is our own Officer Robinson getting his valedictorian award at the academy. The one on the far left as well is our newest officer as well. Officer Wheathorn getting his director's award. So the interesting part about this, they give out 6 awards in the academy. And we're talking about 20-plus cadets. Our officers took home 3 of them. So, you know, you can't be valedictorian and what's the next one up?
Salutatorian,
right? You can't be both. But if there was a way, he would have found a way to do it. So we're really proud of our cadets and how they represented us at the academy this past 6 months that they showed up. The top left picture is our honor guard. We were honored to send a team to the Waco Honor Guard Police Memorial a few months ago. And those are the officers that represented us. Bottom picture is 3 of our officers who just finished fighting a fire. An individual resident took a picture of that and posted it on their Facebook. And it was just, you know, a nice picture after fighting a fire. They were exhausted, and it was a good encounter. And the story behind it is really special. The top right is our fire that the officers got their Valor Award fighting. That was an April fire at the last that happened at the quarter that just concluded. And then the bottom is we received a complaint on a yard of an elderly individual who had gone to the hospital. She was in her late 80s, resident was complaining about her yard, and she was in the hospital. Her family was out of town, out of state, actually. So our officers, on their unpaid hour of lunch, brought their personal equipment and took care of her yard for her. So I wanted that to be reflected on this last quarter, something that doesn't reflect in the numbers, just something that they did. And, of course, you know, they don't like me taking pictures of them doing it. That's why they're facing away from me. But, you know, I'm all about that. So wanted to go over our numbers real quick. This is quarterly 24 compared to quarterly 25, April 1st through June 30th. So calls for service, we saw a 16% increase, and again, that's everything. Anytime somebody calls us, that gets logged. Reports taken from those calls for service was a 10% decrease. Obviously, online solicitation, as you can see, stayed at 0. Burglaries of habitation buildings, that kind of stuff, went from 0 to 1. Sex crimes went from 0 to 1. Assaults from 7 to 8. Weapon violations stayed the same. Traffic stops had a 21% increase. Primarily, we are fully staffed for the first time in well over a decade, so we have more officers out there. Yeah, that was that's a huge blessing. We're training them up. Of those citations went 401 to 571 quarter comparison. Arrests decreased by 20%. Accidents decreased by 48%. I'm going to touch on those statistics in a little bit. And thefts decreased by another 13%. slide. And as you can see, the three main arrests are down there. You can see that larceny, which is like theft by check and things like that, that was the main offense, arresting offense, if you will, and then driving under the influence, DWI as well, and then drug narcotics for this quarter. So first 6 months, this is a 7-year, that's as far back as the system would let me go that we do statistics. So 2018 isn't like a big number I don't want to show. It's just that's how far back it would let me go. So that is 2019. You see a consistent decrease in calls for service. That just means that people need us less, which is a blessing. The less we get called, the happier we are, because we know that our residents are happy and they don't need police services or fire services. So 2019, 2025, you look at 8,094. This is just the first 6 months in comparison, 2019 first 6 months, 2020 first 6 months, et cetera, et cetera. We look at our first 6 months in 2019, 2025 of our major statistics, I guess, if you will. We saw a over 40% decrease in accidents from 2023. We saw an over 32% decrease in thefts since 2023, 27% decrease in arrests since 2023, 36% decrease in weapon violations since 2023, and 0% decrease slash increase in burglaries, same as 2023. We put cops on dots, right? We look at the statistics. We see where there is the most accidents. We see where the thefts are occurring in our city. We see if there's a pattern being formed, and we speak to our officers about it. And as you can tell, we have the best in the state and the nation, and they take this, they practice extreme ownership over our community. And if anything happens here, we take it personally. So they work those late hours, they take out those undercover vehicles, and they find the individuals who are doing these thefts and doing these burglaries. So as you can see from the continuous decline from 2023 in thefts and continuous decline in accidents, and we'll keep trying. Our goal is to get that to zero. Our goal is to get that to zero, so we'll see. It's a hard endeavor, but we'll keep trying. Real quick, wanted to go over something that really fascinates me. The time it takes a Woodway PSD officer, they spend more in-class time learning and training than a 4-year college degree, since we're dual-certified and tri-certified, as you can see by our paramedic hire. It takes 2,300 physical hours of training to become a Woodway PSD officer, compared to an average in-class time for a 4-year bachelor's degree of 1,650 physical hours. Woodway PSD officers spend approximately a total of 58 weeks training before they are a public safety officer. This does not include the hundreds of continuing education training they must complete annually once this initial training is completed. So you look at the breakdown, our police academy is 800 hours. Our field training program for the officer side is 528 hours, and that can easily increase if we see a need. Fire Academy, 600 hours. Our Woodway Fire Training Program is 96 to 144, depending on the needs. And then we have miscellaneous training like medical, rope rescue, other high-angle rescue, and then Class B licenses and things like that. So 150-plus hours for those. It takes 2 years to fully train a tri-certified Woodway Public Safety Department public safety officer. Current tenure of command staff, so administration, captains and up, is 98 total years of Woodway PSD experience over 5 positions. So you're looking at 19.6 year average just at the city of Woodway. This isn't from other departments coming, and we add that. This is just at the city of Woodway. Total tenure for a Woodway PSD officer is approximately 10 years per current licensed officer that we have right now. Again, that is just them working at Woodway PSD. Majority of our officers we've taken from other departments, so we don't add that in our Woodway PSD tenure. A retention study was conducted by IECP, found the average of tenure of officers nationwide ranged from 18 to 36 months at a single department before they start applying for a different department. It's a taker's market right now. They'll put you in uniform pretty quick. So the fact that we're hitting 10 years, really proud of that, and want to thank y'all and our city manager and just our staff for that opportunity to be able to get those talented individuals. You may see some different Woodway PSD patrol units. As y'all remember, you were so graciously, you allowed us to purchase the Explorers last year. They should be ready in the next few months. Several months ago, a vehicle committee was formed made up of our driving instructors and patrol officers. This committee was the result of requests from several officers to explore other police units available due to different concerns and current models they were using and units. After several months of research, officers proposed moving to Ford Explorers for the all-wheel drive capacity. better pricing, gas mileage, handling, and comfort for those long 12-hour shifts. Black was also chosen due to the quicker availability for future vehicle orders. In the past, we were waiting 9 months for ordered vehicles. However, now we are receiving these in less than a month after ordering. So Ford has their business down. We were getting the Tahoes on the road December. So you're like 14 months after we order them, by the time they get outfitted and done. And now we're looking at sometime in July/August to get them. So a 5 month difference. We're really happy about that. Big win. The fiscal win for us is the biggest. The prize from 58 to 54. Also, the Explorers are all-wheel drive capacity naturally. They come with all-wheel drive. So that's also a big win for those icy days that are for our Tahoes. Many of them are 2x4, not all-wheel drive, so that helps. Also, savings of $62,917 once all units are replaced with the above-average savings. If that continues, that's how much we will save in just the vehicle replacements. Me being a nerd, wanted to go a little deeper. We're looking at 28 miles per gallon for the Ford Explorers, and we're looking at 20 miles per gallon for the current Tahoes. The average miles driven in a year by our patrol units are around 250,000 miles. Difference in fuel costs annual at an average of $2.50 a gallon. At that average, we would be looking at a savings of almost $9,000 per year in just fuel costs, and almost $100,000 over a 10-year period when we completely convert to Fords. These units...
Per car. Yes, per car. So you can add it up even more. How many cars do we have on the road?
It's over. I believe it's everything.
Okay.
I believe, yes, sir. For all the miles, 250,000 miles that are driven, yeah. 9,000 per year. So we're really, really pumped about that. So these units are not brand new, like, addition to our fleet. They are new units replacing our 2015s. So we're not adding more to our fleet. This is just the natural rotation of replacement of vehicles. And instead of ordering 3 Tahoes, y'all allowed us to order 3 Explorers. They have a 6-year to 8-year shelf life until they are up for replacement themselves. So we're really, really happy about that, really excited. This one is before it got... This one doesn't have the outfitting. This is the one we sent that is getting outfitted right now. So we'll have those lights and everything. But just wanted y'all to see the markings on the side. Our guys are pretty excited about them. And we'll have them out on the roads in the next couple of months, I believe.
I've noticed a lot of agencies have switched to the Explorers.
Yes, sir. A lot of our neighboring agencies are going to full Explorers. Yes, sir. Exactly. Yes, sir. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to ask them, answer them.
Do we have any cars that we're needing to replace in the coming years, next year or two? I mean, usually it's several years.
Exactly right. Yes, sir. So 3 patrol units and 1 administrative is the going rotation that we like to keep.
Are we using byboard?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Can we start looking at local? And I'll tell you the reason why. Mm-hmm. Our Texas state representative, Pat Curry, was telling me that he's been looking into buy board and mm-hmm. issues. They're trying to set up a state agency mm-hmm. to buy vehicles, but he's seeing that buy board is pricing out at retail.
Okay.
And some car dealers can do a better price
okay.
on that. It was just something that came up in the last legislature session at the state, so
yes.
just add that into the repertoire
yeah.
if we can.
We will look into it, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions I can answer?
Chief, just real quick, can you talk a little bit more about the accidents going down? That is quite a big decrease in traffic accidents from last year. I know you probably haven't checked into it too far, but...
Yeah, I have.
That's got to be a record low.
I have not run the specific numbers, but we have seen a decrease on our thoroughfares, our main roads, Estates, Bosque, 84. Those are 3. And I plan on January coming to y'all with actual streets to let y'all know. Because, again, we put cops on dots. You know, we see where the issues are and we put officers there. So that's a 48% decrease,
that's
which
huge.
I'm incredibly happy with. And then over the 6 months going back to 2019, it is by far the lowest, almost half as much as we had in 2023 overall. So we're happy about that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, we're happy about it. These guys are doing, gals are doing a great job. Any other questions I can answer?
All right. Don't think so.
Thank
Chief.
You.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. All right, next up is our semi-annual presentation from the Carlene Bright Arboretum and Pavilion at the Arboretum's report.
Another Hardin Center graduate right here.
Oh, man.
I'm Jack Stanley. I'm the superintendent of the Arboretum across the street for everybody. And a late congratulations to Mr. Whitby, Ms. Gilman, and Mayor Corzall for your past election victories.
Thank you, sir.
Adam and Jennifer, they only let me come across the street twice a year. This is my second one. But some of you may not know who I am. No, I'm just teasing. If some of you have not made appointments or made time to see Ms. Rogers and Mr. Nilette, they're great people. I worked for Waco ISD 34 years, and I retired, came over here because I love the outdoors and being outside. This is the best place I've ever worked for, and I worked through a lot of administrations for Waco, but this is by and far the best administration I've ever worked for. And don't forget my evaluation's coming up. So anyway, let's look. They told me don't spend a lot of time, so let me go pretty quick. I think I have a slide somewhere. Oh, I got, this is new. Right. What do I push?
Other way, there you go.
Right or left? All right. Go pretty quick. I got a little short list here. The biggest thing we did since the last time I was here, we talked about spring planting, awarded the bid, got it in the ground. If you haven't been across the street or the corner of Bosque and Estates, it's beautiful. With all the rainfall we've had, everything's blooming. Few little issues we've had. We've had plants replaced. If you remember when we planted, just a little shout out to Green Life. We had that late cold front, if you remember, in March. After everything was planted, it snuck up on us. And that weekend, Green Life came out here at their cost, their expense, for 2 days with all their crew, covered every single plant that went in the ground with freeze blankets. And when we came back Monday, when the front was gone, they uncovered it. We didn't lose one thing. So it was awesome, and that was at no cost to us. Let me put my glasses on here real quick. Second thing up there, the Arboretum Overflow Parking, the picture on the right is finally complete with the help of Mitch and Rodney and just everybody in the city. We got the blinking crosswalk. We've got it striped. We got the locking gate. We got the signage. We keep it mowed weekly. The usage of that parking lot is increasing just every week. It used to be one car and then three cars and five, and I've seen it full in the last couple of weeks. And it's safe for families to go across, and it goes directly into the splash pad area. Number three, 10 new benches and 2 picnic tables. We had to replace some benches. We tried to go originally with the ones that were composite, but if you really go out to the Arboretum lot, there's a slant to the whole grounds, and with those composites, with the Texas heat, they begin to curl. So we tried to go that route, didn't work, so we bought some new ones that have a little bit more in the second picture in the middle, that have a little metal on the side and the composite in the middle, and they're pretty sturdy. So I think we'll get quite a few years out of that. We had a couple of more picnic tables for the children's area up by the splash pad as well. Next one, number four, new lights in the gazebo and event lawn area. Now, this one we weren't trying to light up like Walmart. We were just trying to put some accent lighting around the perimeter of the gazebo entertainment area where they do weddings and things at night. So if you go out there at night, you kind of see the outline of it. And I think in the future, Lindsay and Jennifer and stuff have some ideas maybe on some little bit more lighting out there for people that want to enjoy it at night. The next one on the list, 5 new trees planted in the trails. A little nemesis of mine is wanting to extend trails, but you can't extend trails where they had the sewer project come through and take out, almost 300 trees. So we bought 5, and people say, why 5? Well, we bought them with large calipers, so it's like they've been in the ground for 5 or 6 years. So we're trying to catch up. Once we couple more years, get some more in there, I think we can begin to cut some more trails in there. But it's coming. I have a lot of people ask about that. A lot of people walk the trails. Splash pad repaired. The splash pad mechanical components are no longer under warranty. So we've had to deal with the, I believe in Michigan, the manufacturer We had to get engineers on the phone, and they've talked us through it, but now we know how to fix any splash pad in the country. We're pretty good. We've replaced all the diaphragms and mechanisms in there, and it's up and running again with the help of Nathan's people in the water department, making sure the pressure's coming in at the right amount, because the water tower's right there. It's coming down the hill. It's at full force, so you have to you know, dial it all back down, and they've got it dialed down to the proper, you know, so many pounds. So thanks to Mitch and his guys. Splash pad scheduled for resurfacing, that was done this past Thursday, but we had to turn this in last week. So it had a little chipping, so I called it under warranty. It didn't cost us anything. They came back, they grind it down and put the new anti-slip shark teeth, whatever they call it, jaws or whatever it is, but they painted it on there, and kids have been playing on it since Friday when we turned it back on for food truck Friday. So, but just a quick short deal. Probably next year, we're probably going to have to go all the way back down to concrete and start over, because if you paint over and you paint over and you paint over, eventually you got to go back down to original surface and start over. So that might be year four. What's the last couple of things? New retaining wall behind the pavilion. On the right, we had Adam looked at it, Jennifer looked at it, Mitch looked at it, three contractors looked at it, Rodney looked at it, I looked at it. But that, there was a wall there that was buckling just due from the, you know, 10 or 12 years of pushing water, and it was concrete blocks. It began to fall. It was going to fall this way, and if somebody happened to be walking back there, it was definitely a liability. So we took that wall went back with a solid concrete wall, lowered the level about 6 to 8 inches above the dirt line, redid all the down drainage spouts on the backside so we get proper drainage away from the wall, and it looks pretty good. So, but anyway, that's just a little bit's going on the last 6 months. Anybody have any questions?
Looks great.
All right, y'all have a great evening.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes, sir.
Lindsay.
Hello, good evening, Mayor and Council. Hope you're all well and blessed. I'm here to present the biannual update on the Pavilion and Discoverwood Way. If you haven't met me already, I'm Lindsay Gomez. I'm the Event and Tourism Superintendent for the city. So first, we had a very busy 6 months, and an even more busy 6 months leading up this way. So first, we had our father-daughter dance. We had two nights this year, and it went amazing. Both nights were sold out. We had a total of 380 guests registered. It was Under the Sea themed, and everybody had an amazing time. For ArboFest this year, we have grown. We were thankful that we avoided the rain, so we were able to have it outside this year. We had an estimated 2,000 guests for that event. We had food trucks, live music, crafts, scavenger hunt, the farmer's market, of course, some temporary tattoos, all that fun stuff. We had our mother and daughter brunch with 200 registered. That was a berry sweet themed event. We had Wall of Sound come in and do the photo booth and DJing. We had JD's from just down the road cater, and then we also had a fun bedazzle bar, which was a hit. All of the moms and daughters enjoyed the little sparkles on the face. And then we also had our mother-son pajama jam recently. We had 96 registered for that. We had dodgeball, gaming trucks. We had pizza from Shorty's, which is always a favorite. We also had Bud's Lemonade come out with a lemonade lab bar, which was fantastic. You can come in, make your own custom-made lemonade. We love them so much that we invited them back out for the 4th of July concert. And once again, it was a hit. Everybody enjoyed it. We had the Woodway Sock Hop. We had 150 registered for that. Lots of fun dancing. We had food from Rio Brazos, which was amazing, like always. We had prizes for best dancers, best dressed, and Woodway Royalty, which was the longest tenured Woodway residence. That was Paul and Phyllis Hubbard. They've lived here for 49 years, which is amazing. Mr. Hubbard was actually the mayor of Woodway from 1983 to 1985, which is awesome to have him here. We did have our bridal suite updated. Fresh new paint, new furniture, nothing crazy. We got some artwork pictures done down on the grounds, and we decided to frame that. It was looking a little drab and needed an update, and we've had an amazing response, especially from the brides. They are really enjoying that new space. We are working on a parking lot resurfacing project that is through JH Contracting. That is going to be happening through August in segments. So it should be complete, estimated August 31st. And that should last us about 10 to 15 years with proper maintenance. Then we had our summer concerts, which are still going on. We are averaging about 150 to 200 guests per concert. So far, we've had Sammy Brown, Chris Kalunga, and Out Loud recently for the 4th of July concert. We did get rained out, but we pivoted really quickly and moved it inside the pavilion, and it was still a great turnout despite all of the rain. Next Tuesday, we have our acoustic concert down at Whitehall with Bill and Phil. I know they throw in a lot of comedy into their family-friendly comedy into their segment as well, so that should be fun. And then we have our back-to-school bash on August 7th with the Sloppy Joe Band. They're little local legends here, so that's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be down at the gazebo. I'm not sure if Jack touched on that, but looking forward to expanding the summer concert series. We are looking into getting a permanent stage built down there for that purpose, to really expand on that. So getting some numbers together, everything estimated, and hopefully we'll have more news on that soon. And then as far as programming, we have a lot going on. We have our monthly farmers market, story time, sunset yoga. We had candles and cocktails, which is a girls' night in. You can make their own candle with hammer and stain. We had a spring break scavenger hunt, paint your date, which was a lot of fun, also with hammer and stain. You got to paint, not actually your date, but you got to paint a portrait of your date, and there were some interesting artists out there. We had nature walks, field trips, lots of field trips, especially in the summer too, which is a lot of fun seeing some of these summer programmings coming out here. We have a summer reading program and a summer scavenger hunt that is getting a great response. We've had a lot of kids come through. Food Truck Fridays, which is also going great, and then Barbecue and Brews. We actually have another one in partnership with Hellberg's towards the end of this month. So, any questions? I was trying to make that quick for y'all.
Great event.
Thank you so much.
Really great job, guys. Thank you very much for those updates. We're moving on to the Woodway Family Center's report. So, Mr. Rogers.
Mayor, Council, thank you for allowing me to present tonight. I'll be brief. I know we have a lot of conversation around the Family Center tonight, so I'll try to be as brief as possible. Right or left or up or down? Right. All right. So, again, partnering with Providence Village for our senior sponsorship. That sponsorship is coming to a close, and we are currently seeking a new senior programming sponsor. If you know anyone, please pass my number along. As far as programming attendance, you'll see, I apologize for my mistake, the error on the original presentation for those numbers not being correct, but got them corrected here. I had a little formula issue. You'll see a pattern where we started seeing early this year lots of increase in activity. You don't have a complete list of all the different classes that we've had over there. We grouped some of them together, cards, games, social hours. But you'll start to see as you go throughout the year where we had two and then zero and zero, and then April and May and June, you see these spikes. We made some changes to the programming, how we were advertising, as well as some of those classes are now themed. We also started offering introductions to classes, teaching games, teaching card games, dominoes, and we saw a great response to that. Same thing with social hour. We saw increases in April and May from zero. So all of a sudden we have folks showing up. And those are one singular event a month. We didn't have one in June. And so we started theming those. So we started finding ways to create some excitement and some buzz. Most of the classes you'll start to see increases. All of our strength and stretch, chair yoga, pickleball 101, all those classes started seeing some elevated participation. And that has led to an increase in this 6 months, January through June, over the previous 6 months by about 2,800 visits more. So a lot of more people coming to the building. That is because some existing classes are doing well. Some classes that were underperforming last time I spoke are now seeing activity, but also we're offering more classes in general from how we started. Some pictures here. Top left is from our trip to the National Park to go see the woolly mammoths. That was a fun, exciting trip for everybody. Next class is our line dancing with Carla, and she regularly packs the room. Second row left is from our potluck, another full house. These potlucks are becoming quite popular. This is looks like Domino Train in the middle row to the right. We also have stick fit drumming there at the bottom left. And then Chief granted permission for us to borrow some officers to come out. And we had an event with them. I apologize that my guys were asking to be arrested by your officers during that class. But it was a really, really great time for engagement. And
he was a nice shade of red when he came back to the
but they had a lot of fun. I think this is a class that after it happened, we started even getting more buzz, and hopefully it's something we can do more and more. A list of our partnerships, some of the folks that we bring in to teach our classes. The partnerships are the reason you see some of the success in those numbers. Those folks really do a great job of bringing in the crowds, teaching all kinds of things from physical activity, just education, a lot of great things being taught. Raisin Cane's is our youth sponsor still. They have indicated they would like to continue, so we are awaiting their continuing of their sponsorship, hopefully in the next month or so. Our youth programming attendance, pretty much the same trends. Now, my leagues are down from where they were pre-COVID. A lot of those folks, those youngsters, have aged out of our programming, and while we were closed, a lot of them went to other facilities, other agencies. Sports did not stop during COVID, though we weren't having them here at the Family Center. So do believe our numbers are on the rise, and we'll see those league participation levels come up to pre-COVID levels soon. But we have made up for that in our clinic offerings. When we didn't offer clinics before, now we're offering 1 to 2 a month for the most part. June, you see a step up to, let's see, 3 clinics. And I think in July, we have a total of 4. So definitely a lot of offerings for the summer. Year over year. This 6 months compared to the previous 6 months, we're up about 540 more participants than we had when we first opened. We've had a very busy summer with a lot of additional clinics. The only other real significant thing of note, training has ended for the initial rollout for our Civic Rec software, which will help me in not giving you bad formulas and Excel spreadsheets. We'll be able to get great data, and that data will help drive all kinds of decisions of what types of classes are popular, where our people are coming from, all the wonderful things, plus the security and liability issues that we had with pen and paper. This software will alleviate all of that. I'm hoping to have that software live in the next 60 days. Pray for us. It's a lot. So we're about to start doing a lot of user updates, and that is just a lot of time clicking on a keyboard. And with that, do you guys have any questions? Thank you all very much.
Jimmy, I have one.
Okay.
The number of people, I mean, 4,000 some change, do we know where those people are coming from, or does that come with this new software?
Loosely, we do. With the youth programming, I absolutely do. So we're about 55% Woodway, 45% out of the city. That is, for youth programming, about on par with it's always been. The senior programming, it just depends on if they want to share their zip code with me and if I can determine. So we're about 55-60% Woodway residents, 40-45% non-resident. And again, that's it's an educated guess, because I'd say, you know, 10-20% of the folks that come in don't share their zip code with us. The software that we have now will allow us to determine that and be more specific, let that data drive, you know, decisions in the future. So, yeah, that absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Somebody else had a question.
Youth is mainly financial benefits to the city, because we charge for those leagues, correct?
Almost all of our youth activities come with a fee. We do have a few that are free. We're about to have a bike rodeo that has no cost. Stranger Danger in this month that don't incur a cost. They don't have an expense or a revenue. But most of the youth, 95-96% is generates a fee.
And on the senior side or the 55-plus, I think you were talking about possibly having a card program for those that are outside the city limits that could be a fee process to raise revenue also?
So the software has more features than we'll ever use, but and one of the benefits would be if and when council decides to charge fees for senior services, for senior programming, we'd be able to determine that. You could break it down to resident, non-resident. There's all kinds of ways to slice that up, but that software would be able to give us good information to make that decision. Another piece of that software is it has cost extraction, I'm not saying that correctly, where I can put in all of my expenses down to the water bill, the electric bill for the family center, and we can come up with an operating cost per hour of that facility. And so, you know, to be honest with you, in senior programs, senior centers, youth rec, it's not feasible to expect 100% of your expenses. It just isn't that way, especially in the youth sports. But you can go in there and say, hey, I want to generate 50% mm-hmm. of my expenses. You could set that goal. You could make it, there's so many ways to slice it, I don't want to bore you to death, but you can make it to where, so bingo has, we have prizes that we give away, so we know what that expense is, so we can recoup some of that expense. Card games, after buying your original cards, you don't have much of an expense replacement over time. So do we want to charge the same for playing Canasta as we do for an exercise class? This will give us the opportunity to make those decisions and slice that up.
Once we put something on the agenda and vote for it on something like that, how long would it take to implement it? About 2 months, 3 months? Or?
I wish. Honestly, so I'm probably 2 months away from just getting the system online and people registering. You do want to gather data over time of what is actually, you know, occurring, what people, which people are coming in for which classes, where they're coming from, all of those little details that I've tracked on an Excel spreadsheet. This will be able to give us a better snapshot of that. I do my best with, you know, Excel, but this will be able to tell us really where we need to be focused and give you a better idea of how to make that decision.
Sooner the council can recommend yes or no, the sooner you could be able to get something going.
We're headed that way regardless. That's coming. So we finished training, the rollout period. Now it's time to import all my user data, get my front office staff ready to for the onslaught of registration, because that's going to be painful. Trying to register several thousand people in a short amount of time is going to be quite an event. So, you know, 60 days before we can even start gathering data, you know, in business, I would say you would want at least a rolling 12 months of data before you made any significant change. Of course, if we decide sooner, we decide sooner. But I think the more data you have to make that decision, the better. So I don't know if 3 to 4 months is going to give us. We could start at 3 to 4 months and then reevaluate in 12. It's all kinds of ways to slice that.
The non-citizens I've talked to that's been using the facility seems to not have a problem with the idea of us starting to charge some type of a fee to offset some of the expenses.
Yeah, I hear it both ways. My expectation is we're going to see some of those numbers decrease, some of those participation levels decrease once we start charging. Both non-resident and if we charge resident, we're going to lose both. There are other facilities operating right now that don't charge. So,
but if we have more availability of the courts, that's going to make a benefit from the standpoint of
people
don't go to other courts because they know that they're going to be full and they can't get a court in a period of time.
There'll be some unintended consequences we don't like and some that we do.
Can you remind me the level of sponsorship for Providence Village?
So for senior sponsorship, we asked for $2,500, okay. So 12-month sponsorship. I would love to negotiate that, maybe higher the senior expenses. So right now I can't add any more programming because I'm maxed out on budget and staff. So one easy way to do that is seek outside revenue. So right. If we can get us a generous sponsor, then I'd love that.
Well, I greatly appreciate your work on trying to get sponsors to cover costs. Yeah. So thank you for your work on that.
Absolutely.
No, that's not easy.
Begging for money's not easy.
No.
But you got to ask. You ask 100 times,
right.
Get one to say yes.
That's right.
Good job.
Anybody else?
Good job.
Thank you. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for our presentations. Item number 10 is our executive session. We'll recess our open meeting at 6:55 p.m. and go into executive session. All right, council, coming out of executive session at 7:27 p.m., back into open session. All right, thank you all very much. We are moving on now to item number 11. This is discussion and consider action on the recommendation from the Parks and Recreation Commission to demolish the old Woodway Family Center and on possible future uses of the space. Can I get a motion to discuss, please?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Manager, any comments on number 11, please?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. At the May Parks and Recreation Commission meeting, commissioners received a presentation from city staff outlining the history and condition of the former Woodway Family Center building. The commission voted to recommend demolition to the building due to its current condition, underutilization, and limitations for renovation. That's all that's in the background there.
Okay, thank you very much. Council, any discussion on this item?
I'd like to say that about that meeting, our chairman of the Parks Board really did a fabulous job on that.
Amen.
It was a very difficult meeting, and he actually was recommending to save the building and see what uses we can do with it. There's 9 members to that board, and of course the bare minimum showed up, which was the 5 people, and there was 3 voted to tear it down. I know that was enough to pass, but it still was 1/3 of the total members of the board, and I don't know if we really got a fair representation about the thoughts of the entire board. I know we got the representation of the citizens that were there and the citizens here, and of course they feel differently.
Yeah, I heard I was at that meeting and I recorded the entire meeting, all the people that spoke and what the board actually said and came to conclusions on and the 2 motions that they attempted to pass. Of the 23 people that spoke, 21 spoke in favor of keeping the old family center, 1 spoke in opposition. And there was 1 that spoke on an unrelated topic. There was unfortunate misinformation that had been given. I don't know if it was by staff or if they saw the interview on TV with our mayor where it was said that the cost to renovate would be $3 million. Well, that is way out of line. The cost is to renovate and have ADA compliance is likely less than half that amount. The thing is, it's hard to get a proper appreciation of a situation when there isn't proper information given. And, you know, the 2 people that voted or that made the motion and seconded the motion to tear down the building also voiced that, and it's right there on the tape, it's not me speaking, it's on the tape, that they wanted to do something because they had children. We, here as a body here, or on any board that represents this city, are not here for personal reasons. We're here to represent you folks. That's the only reason we're here. And to me, I can't even understand how someone can come to that conclusion. In my opinion, that entire motion should be invalidated for that very reason. But, you know, that was what my observation was, and I'm happy to share all the recordings with city staff. You can go through it if you'd like.
Was there a quorum at the Parks meeting?
There was a quorum.
Okay. Were the votes recorded and tabulated correctly?
Yes.
So it wasn't an invalid vote or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I've listened to it. I was not able to attend, but it's available on the city website.
I'm the Parks and Rec liaison. I think that it was a very contentious meeting, and I think that everybody there voted their conscience. The quorum was valid, and the three people that voted to take it down voted their conscience for the reasons that they gave. So, you know, there was a lady here this evening that said, just because we don't come up here and disagree with the people doesn't necessarily mean that we agree with turning it down. And I'm a senior. I'm a legitimate senior. I'm not a 55-year-old senior. I'm a legitimate senior. A legitimate senior in my mind being 65 and up, which means that 2,400 people in our community, about 10,000 around, are being represented by 30 people or 40 that come up here and state their positions as if all the other 2,400 people agree with them. That's an erroneous assumption. So at the Parks and Rec meeting, that was a very difficult and contentious meeting. Those council members or those commissioners that voted were up there being denigrated. They courageously voted their conscience. Whether or not you agree or disagree with them, they voted their conscience. They voted as a quorum. It was 3-2. So, you know, to assume there is some kind of nefarious reason that they voted the way they voted, in my humble opinion, being there, that's erroneous. You know, Councilman Russell, you were back there behind that orchestrating who should talk, who shouldn't talk, the entire, so you got everybody up there. So, and everybody except one agreed with, apparently, you.
They was asking who to talk, how to do it, and I was explaining, okay, here's how you do it, go ahead.
Well, I can appreciate your position there, but
yes.
I sat there and watched
what's
going on.
Yeah, I was
it's
saying.
Your turn.
Yes, so, and of course that one that you mentioned was the mayor's mother-in-law.
Well, can I? Why do you have such an addiction to my mother-in-law? Why? My mother-in-law is a tax-paying citizen of Woodway, Texas. Treat her like that.
But
treat her like that.
But
why do you bring her up as a connection?
Because
to
me? She's following whatever you're telling her.
No, she's an independent woman.
I don't believe that.
You don't believe a woman can be independent?
I don't believe that she's not doing your bidding.
You don't believe that she can come here on her own accord and speak her mind and have her own opinion?
She's doing your bidding and following you.
That is
now, you're getting contentious.
Well, I am. That is my mother-in-law that you're not treating
I'm just pointing out.
Okay, let's come back to the matter.
It is a family member.
I would like to speak for some people that are not here and that we have not heard from in all these weeks that we have listened to the citizens that have come, and those are the ones that made the decision in the first place to build the new family center, and in that decision was to tear the old one down. Those people looked into the cost, all of the ramifications of the decision that they made to build that new family center. And with that, all along, the decision was to tear down the old family center and to create the new one. And it was not done lightly. It was not done unreasonably. They did the research. This has been going on since 2019. This didn't happen overnight.
But also the general expectation was that the new family center was going to be approximately 18,000 square feet. It was a third less than that, approximately, give or take.
But the activities that take place in that family center are not based on the square footage alone. It's the programming and all that Jimmy has done and the people have done to create the result of servicing the membership of Woodway.
If we
and
look
there's
at what
many
Jimmy
people
presented,
that are not coming and saying anything that are very happy with what the plans are.
But if we look at what Jimmy presented earlier today, we'll see that the largest usage was by pickleball. I'm taking the gross people in the room, and that by far represents the largest, you know, demographic for use in the family center. We know by people that spoke today, as in previous meetings, there just isn't enough room.
How many pickleball courts have just been opened up in Waco?
Indoors?
They just opened it up.
All right, guys.
And they're also going to have them at First Woodway. So there's a lot coming. It's like building a gas station on every corner.
Not very many indoor pickleball courts.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. We're just going to keep the conversation up here. Thank you.
It's hard, though, whenever a question gets asked open.
Let's keep the conversation up here. All right. Any other discussion, please?
Well, go ahead.
I just want to reiterate that we should be beholden to that Parks and Rec Board. They did what they did courageously and by their beliefs. They didn't do it at anyone's direction. And you know, I'm a 45-year businessman, president of a few companies. I'm not beholden to anybody, including the mayor, including Janelle. We all ran together. I don't answer to anyone. I vote up here on my beliefs. And my belief is that seniors are 65 and up. And we've listened to lots and lots of rhetoric about manipulating the number from 2,400 to 4,600, which is ridiculous. I'm part of a ministry at my church that's 400 people on you. We had to rename the ministry because 55-year-olds didn't want to be called seniors. So at the end of the day, because we have 30 people that you know well come to a meeting and speak, I'm not discounting their reasoning. The folks here, very respectful of their positions, but they don't represent 2,400 people. I talk just like you do. I talk to a lot of seniors in our community. Most of them, as the lady presented a while ago, don't agree with the situation that most of the folks that come here.
Well, why haven't they been to one of the four meetings where we had literally standing room only and incredible percentage of people wanted to keep?
I can't speak for that, David.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I know what they know. I mean, this lady came tonight saying the same exact thing I'm saying.
I see we have three options. I mean, most people think it's keep it or tear it down. There's one other, and one of the ladies spoke about it, and I like this option the best. Put it up for the next election. Looks like we're going to have an election in November. On changing the city charter. I know it's a little different subject, but there's been a petition.
Governor Russell, we're not only not posted for that, there's...
Well, but what I'm saying is there looks like there's going to be, if
we're
not...
We're not posted for that.
Well, we could, if not November, we could put it on the May election. So if we don't want to talk about that one. So my point is one, it would allow the citizens to decide. But here's the other thing is, if we vote to tear it down, there is a clause in our charter for a referendum. All we have to do is get 400 or more signatures. There has been a petition already on a different subject that has far more than 400 signatures. There's a large group of people that has worked on this. I did very little, and it wasn't me heading it up in any way. But, because at first I wasn't even for it, but I think it's okay now. But my point is they can get the 400 signatures within the 30-day period. There's attorneys that I know that said they could get an injunction right away if we vote to tear it down. So there's three options, basically. We can keep it. I don't feel like y'all are thinking y'all want to keep it. There might be one, two, or three of us that might. We can tear it down, but that would go to the referendum process. Or we can vote to go to a public vote. And I see the two of them, either way, it's going to go to a public vote, more than likely.
Mr. Russell, your intimidation tactics and your threats aren't going to stop the council from making the decision.
He's not threatening.
I think suggesting that there's going to be any kind of referendum if we decide one way or another, that's intimidation and that's a threat. We are volunteers up here.
It's explaining
your city charter. That kind of bullying is really not appropriate for a council member. It's not appropriate. People should be free to vote.
I know it hurt your feelings, and I'm sorry it might hurt your feelings. But
people should be able to vote according to their convictions, not because of intimidation or threats or anything like that.
This is
and
not
you,
intimidation.
You threatening a referendum or whatever it's called.
It's not even me
is
threatening.
Is not
you're saying the citizens
not,
will
not appropriate,
do that.
Sir. Not appropriate.
The citizens any do other, have a say in this, Mr. Mayor.
Any other discussion regarding this topic, please?
What are there planned? I know there's been stuff floated about. Are there particular plans in place for thoughts if
we're posted for a possible future use of this space, but because we're going quite long, I'm going to suggest we do the future uses for another meeting. So that way we have time to talk about.
As far as the Parks and Rec board voted,
right.
They voted to raise the Old Family Center. They did not vote on any suggestion as to what we should do in its place. The last time this went before the council, there were four options. They didn't have that set of rules this time around. They could do anything they wanted to do in terms of recommendation. They chose to raise it and not make a recommendation at that point, just to have time to discuss what should be planned. Mm-hmm. There were some pretty good options that were kicked around, I thought, but I'm the liaison, so I'm not allowed to jump in. But that's what happened at the Parks and Rec Commission. So,
Mr. Manager, are you okay if we make an action on the recommendation from the parks and do possible future uses on a later item?
I don't have any objection, Mayor, how council wishes to style the action item as long as our city attorney is all right with it.
Is that okay, Mr. Shaw?
You're posted for discussion and action on the recommendation and possible future uses. It's up to the council to decide.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion if I could.
You are free to make a motion.
I would still like to have more discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
I think one thing that we have not addressed that I do think that the Parks and Rec Board did address well is the numbers. I think this was the Parks Board meeting in May, our city manager gave a presentation and mentioned that in order to bring the current, the old family center up to the ADA codes, that it would be a one-time $300,000 cost. Is that correct?
Ballpark.
Okay. Okay, and so then we have the repairs and the money for repairs and staffing per year at over $126,000. And so, and I hear Jamie saying that for what we're doing, that his staff is the budget and staffing are at capacity, so we don't have room for more. So I really am curious about how we would plan to cover these ongoing costs, especially the deferred maintenance, what our plan is for that. And then I struggle with, just to be honest, I struggle with the idea of making a decision without knowing what the future use is, based on how much is that going to, whatever is going to happen, how much is that going to cost? Because I think right now, I know what some of the costs are, up front. And then we know, I don't know how accurate the number is from several, I think it was 2019, that it may have been after that, but the $263,000 to demo is a one-time cost, and then after that, whatever we do would have, depending on what it was, like if it was outdoor pickleball courts, that would have less ongoing maintenance. Other ideas would have more costs, and again, I would just like to know our plan for covering those costs, because we get a lot of feedback about wanting to keep our tax rate as low as possible, and I want to be able to do that. Also hearing a lot of calls for services, and sometimes it's hard to make those things match. And so I have from the get-go have felt felt torn, not knowing what the numbers are on anything, we do have more numbers than we did. I was wondering about, I know that there's been a lot of talk about the HVAC system, and I was wondering if there was an update on the status of the HVAC in the old family center.
Jimmy may have to help me out with how many are actually running as we speak. But until staff has had direction on which way to go with the building, whether we're keeping it
right, or
we're not, we've done minimal maintenance on it just because we do house documents, and it is open to the public to use the restrooms when they utilize the ball fields. That's really the extent of its use.
Right. But at one point a while back, there was talk of HVAC system not being in great shape, and then I hear other people say that it's in great shape, and I was just curious what the official stance is on that.
So currently there are five working units.
There are five working units, two that are not working, and a eighth unit that is no longer in the building. It was removed many years ago. You walk in the building right now, and it's 74, 73 degrees, which is comfortable to walk around a building. Play pickleball in that room for any length of time, and you will change your mind. That you start putting occupancy load in that building, that door opening up as people come and go, and the gym does not keep up. So one of the non-working units is in the gym. So it definitely has to be addressed. I think you have to put in the missing eighth unit. That's my opinion, not necessarily an official opinion, just an opinion.
It's an air handler.
Yeah. What's that?
It was an air handler. I had an AC guy go through with me before the parks meeting. It's one of the systems you're missing is a 5-ton unit. It's a direct air type unit. It can be replaced for under $15,000. Air handler is probably around $5,000.
But you would definitely want, especially because that's the one that controls the...
Correct,
correct.
The concessions.
So far as the temperature, when we was checking it out, it was colder in that building because of the direct air system than the new building. The new building is a duct-style system, which takes more air to push out the cold air. Now, also, he said that we're running that system, and it gives an alarm going off, and we really shouldn't be running it. You know, you hear that alarm going off whenever it's turned on in there. But it could be upgraded, fixed for a pretty minimal amount of money. Some of those systems was replaced not all that long ago, some of the other ones. So, you know, there again, if we tear it down, we'll be salvaging a lot of good units.
Is that in it? Well, one, I don't know how you went about, you know, finding someone to go do that.
Contractors I deal with.
Okay.
I mean, those are all homey style units. They're not commercial, you know, major different style. Whenever Yost started AC in that, he did a good job at finding good values.
Okay. All right. So we have an estimate, and I'm guessing that that is in addition to the repairs and staffing figure that we have in our...
Probably not. I'm thinking that's probably in that number. I mean, it's not a large number.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying the city didn't know. I mean, not to your fault, we haven't asked you, but I just am...
I feel pretty confident in them.
That $126,000 number is staff. Is that correct, Mr. Mayor?
I believe that's one staff.
One full staff. You know, we've heard over and over again that volunteers can run it and do all that. We can't do that. Somebody has to run it that knows what they're doing. It has to be a staff member here. That money comes out of the general fund. That money is tax dollars, not...
I believe we've been renting it some and making some money. If we was to keep it, I have a lot of confidence in our director of monetizing it to make it come out pretty well. We talked about the card system that will offset a lot of that. There's also rentals to places like Mallor Academy that has asked many times. They called me just the other day, and I gave them Jimmy's phone number and said, give them a call.
Mallor?
Huh?
Mallor's building a gym of their own. Why would
I
they
think
call
what
you
they do
that?
Want to do it right now. You know, they're into. Another citizen's called and was wanting something, and I was there again, gave him Jimmy's number, said don't know what any of the numbers are, but here's the man, he does a good job.
So on page 57 of our packet, there is a list of the estimated costs that include salaries and benefits, supplies and materials, repairs and maintenance. And then on the following page, it says other services and charges. And I believe it all adds up to $126,458. But it does not, I don't see, I do see for repairs and maintenance, buildings and grounds, is $6,000, but I don't see much about deferred maintenance or I don't see anything related to AC.
What's the number for staffing?
Well, salaries and benefits, $66,000. Okay. And
so, if you say $126,000 and add a 20 to it, you're going to say $150,000, we should be tearing down a 12,000 square foot building that we already know the building we have now is too small. Jimmy's doing a great job filling it up. He's doing a great job maximizing it. But I just feel like if we give him another 12,000 square feet, he'll do an equal great job on it and give... those youth services that some of the board members on the Parks Board were saying they're not getting more square foot
gives more opportunities.
My question, though, is do we have the staffing and this, like, way to fund it? Because right now, with what we've got, I've heard Jimmy say we're at capacity for the amount of...
We just said
we can't.
You know, his card program, rental program, many other things should offset it. Even if it is at a small loss, you want to lose a building that it cost us $6.7 million to build, replace. That's a kind of a, you know, $150,000, $6.7 million. It doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, so, and that's not apples, and that's apples and oranges. That's apples and oranges. That's not apples for apples.
We also
but we keep using those numbers.
We also don't know what the future use would be. I mean, that's, I really liked what Ms. McGregor said about purpose, having what, knowing the purpose of keeping it. What, I mean, I think I've heard people express what that could be, but then I also feel like I would love to explore what the purpose of, you know, taking it down and what else could be done there that is also in service to our community. That I just, I feel like both of those things need to happen at once, which is our original.
If we did a covered pickleball court, which seems like a lot of people was talking about, or if we do a playground, which we've got one right across the street, or we do most anything that's non-heated and cooled. In Texas, we have such extreme cold and heat and rain. The value of a 12,000 square foot heated and cooled building would outweigh it, in my opinion. But still, we're really grappling with this, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm arguing at all, but I feel like if we punt it to the citizens, that would be a deciding factor that just, you know, the citizens decided, and just like in y'all's election, the citizens decided. And, you know, suddenly it's not five people or seven people deciding for all of Woodway what to do with this important issue. It's however many people show up at the polls. And I feel like it could happen either way. You know, there might be people get upset if we wish to vote to keep it. And there again, this would be one of those that the public can decide. And we're going to have an election in May anyway, you know, odds are.
I feel like that's a long time to...
Well, I've asked for it the last 2 years, but we won't have, wouldn't have a hearing.
What would you like to see happen, Mayor Pro Tem?
I would like to, if I'm going to make a decision, I would love to have a discussion of the future use, because I want to know what I'm voting for.
How about if we postpone it and talk about future uses and let citizens talk about the possibilities that we could...
The thing that I think could be helpful, because I think that there are great options, is to know the cost of those options. I mean,
you pretty well have it, and you know your park board members.
Not for an unimagined future potential use.
Well, I mean, it sounds like I don't know how much more it would cost than that. But, you know, your parks board members that was that decided to tear it down, one of the things they were saying was there's not enough programming for their kids, their age, their groups. And we heard it here that, you know, someone that was under 55 would like to be able to do it. There again, I have confidence in Jimmy that he could come up with some ideas that would be great. And maybe that's what we need to do.
Would it help you if I shared some budget numbers with you with the money that you have at hand, the money that we have at hand to work with?
I have that, but if you, that would be good.
So we have $700,000 set aside just for this old family center to either rehab it or to demo it.
How much?
$700,000.
Okay, I thought you said 100. I thought it was closer to 7.
No, 7.
Yeah.
And then we have, in another separate fund, we have $2 million for future use of this. Well, actually, I take that back, for any project, any citywide project.
Okay.
So we can do quite a bit with that money. But this will not increase taxes on anybody to to do anything like that, like, you know, use the seven. It's earmarked specifically for the old facility. You bring up a really good point about the ongoing costs, you know, for staffing and for doing continuing to operate the facility. That will raise taxes, and that will boost them up. And then we have $2 million set aside for any capital project that we'd like to do. So does that help you know what we're playing with? I wouldn't feel comfortable going any above any of those figures. By the way, this was available from the manager for a long time.
You shouldn't have to if you're talking about renovation.
If you're talking about...
And what we could do is, like you said, the funds are available, $100,000+, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is the staffing for that building, right?
Yes, sir. That was one staff member and... the ladies and gentlemen that Jimmy has come in as contractors, putting on classes, general maintenance, things of that nature.
So that would probably be pretty close to what we're talking about. I can't imagine with the numbers that our city deals with that $150,000 would, or whatever the number is, would cause us to raise taxes. But my point either way, with the $700,000, $2 million for whatever options, and we don't want to spend, of course, all of it on anything. But what if we keep it going for another few years and reevaluate it again and see if we set up, and I'm confident y'all could come up with the good programs along with Jimmy for this missed demographic that we're missing that is so important. Because, you know, if we tear it down, we won't have that indoor heated and cool space, but if we keep it, we could do programs from that standpoint.
So what I'm saying is that for this evening, where we have an advisory board who has passed along their recommendation, and to me, why have an advisory board if you're not going to listen to them? But I do think that it's important to also be able to have to know what the potential is and not sit there with this like empty, you know, well, what are they going to do with it? So just to be able to have, I know we're not, I don't think we should decide a future use tonight, but I think it should be discussed to go hand in hand. I think the way that this item was written was beneficial to let the public know.
There was discussion, Mayor Pro Tem, in the Parks and Rec Commission about what potential that space could be if it were, once it were down, you know, in terms of, and you said a playground, mm-hmm. They said immersive playground.
A what?
Immersive playground.
Inclusive.
I was trying to think what immersive would be.
Okay, which means that you've got a playground. They don't have any around here that you can use wheelchairs and, you know, disability. But we don't.
Yeah, we, matter of fact, Amin and I worked.
That was part of one of the discussions at the Parks and Rec. They discussed, choice four, which they put before the council the last time. But each of them, you know, just they couldn't decide on, they felt like having the conversation about what should be done should be evaluated in a more extensive way.
And there was no option to save it in the different choices.
So
they left it to us.
At the end of the day, they left it to us, and at the end of the day, they voted to tear it down.
So how about this, Mayor Pro Tem, just to help you here, what if we asked management to bring back those four options that were originally recommended by Parks, the original four?
Yes, sir.
You with me? And I would also like to ask city manager to also include in there the possibility of a municipal city swimming pool as well.
Swimming pool?
Yeah.
Now, We're just looking at options. I understand,
that's
but we
all
just
we're
had
doing.
Trouble with
that's
our,
all we're doing.
Our splash pad and
no,
swimming pool
no, no, no.
will be very expensive.
Nope. We are just looking at options. Well, that's all we're going to do.
While we're looking at options,
we can't move forward until we have.
Can we have an option of keeping the building?
Yeah, that is. That's always an option.
We see on the four that wasn't one of the options.
That's always the options.
Yeah.
That's because
that's not a future.
It had been voted on to tear it down. That's why they had options.
Tell me that again.
Because it was sent to them that building wasn't going to be there anymore, and they had options. That's why they had options.
You'll keep bringing that up. Three of us was on the council whenever we voted on the family center, and I did not vote for it because I wanted it to be a public vote. But we didn't say what was going to be, but we did at that time. It was supposed to be quite larger. I think at one time they were talking about 22,700 square feet. Then it seemed it settled at 18,700 feet, and now it's not much bigger than the one we have now. And the reason that that came up was because we was literally busting at the seams with the original one. Jimmy had mentioned that the youth has not came back as strong because of once COVID shut everything down, we kept it down too long. And of course, someone in the audience was saying we wasn't using it before the new one. Well, most people didn't know if it was still open.
I get that, Councilman Russell. I get that. But that wasn't the question here.
But you were saying that we voted to tear it down when we voted.
But that's what the Parks and Rec got. That were there, whatever the reasons were, that's what the Parks and Rec got was four choices. So
limiting.
Pretending that they got something they didn't get because of whatever happened for the reasons, that ain't it.
Okay, if I may.
They got four choices.
If I may, just to help us move along a little bit here, are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
I just want I want actual future ideas to be part of our decision.
Of keeping, if we keep it, it was going to have whatever to use it.
Well, just to know. I mean, I'm comfortable with what you said.
Okay.
That was the answer to your question.
For future uses of the space, just when we make the motion, just so you know, the recommendation for the Parks Board is to demolish the old Family Center. Possible future uses, bring back the four original options that were discussed, add the option of a city pool in there, and then anything else you'd like. We're just looking at options. We're not doing anything. We're just looking at these.
But one of the options is keeping them.
No. The option you have is to decline a motion, to decline the Parks and Rec recommendation. That's your option. Because we're posted for the demo, not for the reinstatement.
Okay, so one of the options is just decline the recommendation, which in effect would keep the building.
Yes, you can make that motion, absolutely. Absolutely, you can.
I'm not sure I followed this. I mean, one option would be to table that decision. I mean, the way you're phrasing it as far as declining the recommendation at this point. Sounds like you're making a decision. What you're trying to do is defer that decision until after you have future uses. Is that correct?
Right. I agree. I think tabling is what we're...
I would agree. Yeah, that makes sense.
But and whenever it comes back, one of the options should be whether or not we keep the building, tear it down, or look at other options. If we keep the building, we need to have a plan.
No.
If I understand you.
But if we table it, the wording still stays the same.
We're just kicking this can down the road.
I was for making a decision tonight. I just wanted to have the conversation of what the potential future uses could be, because I think that would help the public.
If we keep it or if we don't, what it would be. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand, because the mayor keeps kind of shaking his head. No.
The shaking of my head is because I know that tabling is a strategy that you like to use for not making a decision, and this conversation needs to end tonight because we've been dealing with this for years, and we have to make a decision.
And
we're not going to keep kicking this on down the road.
Years.
No.
And you tabled it. Or not even allowed it to be on the agenda.
No, I don't. I like making decisions. I don't like tabling things.
Well, for 2 years,
we need to get it done.
On the agenda.
And Jimmy, I'm sorry that you've been brought into this. I guess
you've been complimented.
I guess you have. There's no reason for you to be caught in the middle of this. But thank you for providing the information that you did. Council, we have future uses presented to the city manager. Are there any other future, possible future uses that you would like the city manager to consider? He's got five right now.
I just want to make sure I understand. One of them is keeping the building. Is that correct?
No.
No.
So that's not one of your...
No.
No.
This is what's voting the point?
No.
Yes.
Vote not to demolish it. Vote not to demo it with no future use, current
the point,
use.
The point, Councilman,
that's what you can
Houston
do.
Is to answer Mayor Pro Tem's question. That's all he's doing.
She needs, that's what she requested.
So but
that's
I believe one do. Of her questions was, if we keep it, what would it be done? If that's, I understand correctly.
Yeah. Well, I know what would, I mean.
We would do youth programming for like the two park board members that was saying they wanted to tear it down because they did not have any programming. I agree with them. You're talking about, you know, we should listen to them. I'm listening to them. If we have the footage, I feel like we can do something with it. I'm not saying blindly, you save it for no reason at all. We'll find a use. And I'm
sure that we will, but what I wanted, and it's been lost completely, is to be able to have the public be able to hear our discussion about potential future uses, so that it's not just I would never want to demolish it for the sake of demolishing it. I would want to make a choice of we're choosing to do this or we're choosing to do that. And both are choices towards something good that benefits our community. And right now, I don't feel like there's a choice on the table for that something that we would move toward if we were to demolish it. So I just wanted the conversation, I just wanted to have that conversation in public as it is posted on this item.
So, the thing is, we've had, I can think of four significant meetings where there's been a lot of public input.
I agree.
That but they have wanted to see an option for keeping the building. I think that needs to be an option.
Yeah, one. I mean, I'm okay with that. I'm thinking
not
you're okay.
Speaking, yeah, I'm. That's not what I'm even speaking to. I mean, I do think, as it stands right now, if I understand it, we are voting to either keep
uphold
the building, or like yes, or uphold what the Parks and Rec Board voted.
Or
their recommendation to us.
Send it to the public for public vote.
My understanding is we can't do that.
The public elects us to make decisions.
So
that's why we're all elected.
You don't want
a
public to vote on
this. That's the point of a council.
Okay.
Mr. Shaw.
Well, what happens if we have representatives on a board that are making decisions?
I think Mayor Pro Tem was asking a question, sir.
I'm sorry.
Is the council allowed to put something to a city vote just like that? I was not aware that we were.
The power of initiative is to enact an ordinance or repeal an ordinance.
Say that again.
The power of initiative, reserving the public, is to enact or repeal an ordinance.
The referendum I was speaking of.
What's the power of initiative?
I think in our city charter it calls...
You may be right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, in our city charter it's called power of referendum.
There's three.
Hmm?
Right. Initiative, referendum, recall. But regardless, the power is to...
Initiative is ours, isn't
not
it?
Not administrative.
The power is in the people to bring that to the council, not the council to...
Well, what I'm told...
The administrative decisions don't go to public vote. That's what the council's here for. Ordinances go to votes.
What I'm told is that group would probably, just like the city charter item, will probably put a petition together.
If we vote on the position of the Parks and Rec to tear it down or not tear it down, okay, then, lo and behold, we, as a council, use common sense that we are going to do something positive with that property. We're going to do something that benefits the city because we're all up here trying to serve the city and not ourselves. if we use common sense and say we're going to do something really good with that property when we vote to tear it down or not tear it down, to your point, Mayor Pro Tem, we will do something with that property, something positive. We've never talked about anything as a city, even as I said out there, we never talked about anything that wasn't positive for the city.
Oh, no, I totally agree.
Okay, so if we use the common sense that says we're going to do something positive for the city and either vote yay or nay tonight, then we know, the citizens know, that we've talked about we're going to do something positive for the city. They put, you guys, I wasn't here, you guys voted to put four before the Parks and Rec, four really good options. So common sense tells me we're going to do something positive with that. So, you know, let's go. I'll make a motion, but unless you're ready not to.
I want to make sure everybody's had a chance to talk. Suri?
Yeah. Well, I had the same concerns that Mayor Pro Tem had on the cost down the road. We just don't know what those could be if we keep it. I mean, you could have AC units, HVAC, going out again down the road, and of course that can happen at the current one too. So I'm just worried about, we're asked to be fiscally responsible. That's what the people expect of us, and I'm concerned about these unforeseen costs that might come about.
Thank you, sir.
That's my reluctance.
Okay.
It sounds like we don't have a decision tonight. If we're asking for more information.
Okay, well,
I think we have all we need. I think he was saying future expenses of the old building. Is that what you were talking about, Mr.
Yeah.
Suri?
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to accept the Parks and Rec's
recommendation.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Thank you. I'll now call for the vote. All those in favor? Oh, excuse me, Mr. I'm so sorry to do this. Could you also talk about the future uses that we've
what's up there?
Yeah, could you also say, As directed to the...
We consider what we do with the Family Center and possible future uses of the space.
Is that... Could you reword that to specifically say...
Discussion and consider action on the recommendation from Parks and Rec Commission to demolish the old Woodway Family Center and possible future uses of the space.
And I second that.
Hold on. I hate to do this.
I'm sorry, Mr. Whitley.
We've got to do what action you're taking with regard to the Parks and Recreation Commission's recommendation.
And do we have an ordinance number for this? Do we have an ordinance number?
Are you moving to uphold?
Uphold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you please do that again?
All right. I'm moving to uphold the discussion and consideration.
No.
The parks,
uphold the
parks. I'm new to this, guys. Parks and Recreation Commission to demolish the old Woodway Family Center.
You'd be adopting their recommendation, not upholding.
Okay.
Their direction to the council was simply
recommendation.
If you uphold it, you just recommended a recommendation.
Okay, then we're adopting the recommendation.
And I second it.
To the old Woodway Family Center and possible future uses of the space.
Okay, I think that'll go.
I'll second that.
Okay, great. I'll now call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it with two nays. The motion passes. Thank you, Council. Let's take a bio break at 8:19. All right.
Yes.
Everybody back, 8:30. You got everything, Erica?
I'm sorry.
All right, Council, we're all back. All right, reconvening the open session at 8:31 p.m. Okay, item number 12 is discussion and consider action on resolution R25-09, adopting a code of ethics for elected and appointed officials, the code of ethics for members of the city council and of the city's boards and commissions. Could I get a motion to discuss, please?
I'll make a motion to discuss.
I'll second.
It's moved and seconded. Thank you, Council. Mr. Manager, anything on number 12?
There's a brief description there, Mayor. It's quite lengthy. I think everybody's had a chance to read it. Unless anybody just wants me to read it, I will. Otherwise, you could open it up for discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, yeah. Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay, I just wrote this. So to this point in time, our city has not had any official code of conduct for our elected and appointed city officials. We have policies in place for our employees, but our committee felt, and our committee is the former Mayor Pro Tem Williams, Councilman Gilman, and myself, we felt that it's important for our city to have have ethical best practices for our elected and appointed leaders. So we also had a lot of help and support from Keisha Redden, and then also the legal advice of David Shaw as we went through and we reviewed and compiled some TML materials, and we looked at ethics codes adopted by other cities, and then we also use some of the guiding principles for city managers. And putting all of that together, we crafted a policy that serves Woodway by presenting ethical best practices for our elected and appointed leaders, and in a way that we can hold behavior accountable that is not in line with our code of conduct. So we've not had a way to do that up until this point.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Thank you for all your work on the ordinance committee. I guess, what are we doing here? I guess we're gonna discuss any items on this. It is quite a lengthy yes. Code of Ethics, and
citizens of course have not been able to read it yet.
It's in the packet that was posted to the website.
Where was it? It wasn't posted on the city website, and
yeah, I think it was.
Found it there.
Donna, can you
I missed it the first time because it was right below the agenda, but the packet link is right. It's actually for the last 2 months.
I know the mayor was talking about that we wanted to be more transparent and put things on social media.
Well, and the website.
And it wasn't on Nextdoor or Facebook. There was.
That's not how we conduct business, but.
Well, that was something that was said.
No. It's the website.
It is clearly on the website under the agenda, and then it says packet for today.
Well, here is something that I just wanted to mention to you is on item 4, Code of Ethics adopted, item 4 of the section 4. Elected and appointed officials shall listen to continuously and attentively to all public discussions before the body. And then on number 5, council members will consult with the city staff before commenting publicly on matters of the city. An appointed official may not comment publicly on city behalf except authorized under the city policies govern. Now, the point I wanted to mention is, one, what is publicly? Is it interviews, social posts, or even talking with constituents? And also, would the word not be better said instead of consult, but maybe inform the city staff that, especially on interviews, because I've already been asked for an interview for tomorrow, and I think that's something that, you know, whenever we become council members, we take an oath to the Constitution, and this kind of flies in the face of the First Amendment. Because does this say you cannot talk publicly about matters concerning this the city? And when you consult, is it saying that can the staff say, I don't want you to speak about this? I can't imagine a U.S. congressman or senator or state rep or state senator having to consult with the state or the federal government before they make a public statement on any matters coming before them. That's just kind of an item that could be misconstrued, not clear. And when we have something that's not clear enough,
you know, we need to maybe adjust it. Also, social media, we don't have social media accounts as council members. We have personal ones. So I don't think that this would be have anything to do with that if you're talking with constituents on social media. So
well, I think there's, with to speak to that part specifically, there is a difference when you are representing yourself as a council member versus when you're just, you know, online as yourself. So I think that's, I think, Mr. Shaw, can you help me out here with, in regards to number five?
Sure, I think that, as I recall that discussion on that item, matters of city concern there is intended to convey, you know, when the city adopts a position, the city's position is reflected by, obviously, you guys as a body, what you've decided and determined. Now, certainly, Councilmember Russell, nobody is attempting to limit your ability to go to the press and say, I hold a minority position, and this is my position. This is what I think should have happened on a particular issue that was up before the council or is coming, happening in the public. I think the idea there is that as council members, that you have a head of your body and your mayor. There are times when the public is asked to speak and to convey the city's position. And before doing that, not wanting to, again, spread misinformation, not want to misconvey the city's position, checking with staff before adopting the city's position, which may or may not be in line with your personal position on any particular issue, that's what city concern is intended to convey there. But again, so, I appreciate your close reading because I was involved in the drafting, and there's always helpful to have more eyes on it. So thank you for your close reading.
Yeah, I feel like in this situation, as long as I'm not saying the city's position is this, we're fine. If I say my position or my beliefs or I think this might be a situation that would not be running afoul with these ethics. Am I correct on that?
Well, and that would be up to the rest of the body to discuss. There's kind of a procedure for self-governance on these. Mm-hmm. And so depending on what was stated specifically and what context, you know, is this an emergency where a statement is needed immediately to protect lives and property?
That'd be a different story. Correct. I don't think we've had any of that in the last however many years.
Thank God.
But that's why I'm saying that, you know, some of this I feel like is trying to make sure that we narrow what's being said. And if it's an emergency, I can understand that.
Right. But do you want to give some of the history?
It's meant to curb the spread of misinformation from council members or from appointed or commissioners. Just that there are some times where people will provide information and it's that is not in line with what our city has given us or that staff has given us or an opinion is maybe presented as a fact. And
I have a suggestion. It might solve this, but David, you might have to tell me whether I've got some or not. On number five, after the word publicly, if you inserted in their public or in their official capacity, would that solve the issue that you're talking about?
I mean,
is that question directed to me or Councilmember Cook?
Sorry?
Is that a question directed? I'm sorry, I looked at
Well, I'm more asking David Shaw, but yeah, to resolve no, the whole yeah. issue.
Because in reality, it's going to be a place yourself.
Let me be very clear. I did help with the drafting. I certainly take credit and blame for everything in the language. But this is not coming from me. What I hope is, I hope this accurately reflects what the Ordinance Review Committee is bringing before you. So I'm happy to help redraft, revise as that becomes necessary, if that's something the rest of the body wants. But I want to be clear, it's not coming from me. This is coming from that committee.
And one thing that was a constant part of our discussion was how do we make sure that there are no rights to free speech quashed through any of this. And so that is an important part. But we do, there it is specifically hoping to address when a council member speaks on behalf of the city and gives wrong information.
Was it kind of similar to, there was a KWTX interview that someone did that said it was like $3 million to keep the original family building. And
so
of course we found
the point, the point is that if a situation occurs and someone feels like an ethical violation has occurred, they can, there's a
process.
Yeah. And it includes the person also, the person who is making the accusation and taking it to our city clerk, our city secretary, and then there is a chance for the person who has been accused to provide information and to be able to defend themselves and even call witnesses if they so choose. And that can be done in a closed meeting or it can be done in an open meeting. And so the whole heart of it is for there to be transparency across the way, and that just because someone is accused of something does not mean that they're going to be censured. You know, like it's a process, and also that it's a multi-step process that is involved, and that not everybody just is pointing fingers all the time really easily. It takes thought, and there needs to be something that is very clear and substantial, but then also the person always has the opportunity to defend themselves and to provide.
I really appreciate the commentary on this. I kind of like the way it's written in the packet. It makes it very clear. The purpose of this code of ethics for elected and appointed officials is for members of the city council and the city boards and commissions to foster a working relationship characterized by commitment to service, mutual respect, professional courtesy, and free of harassment and unnecessary interpersonal conflict. That to me sums up what the ordinance committee has come up with in here. And if I may, I think that this really came out of what we've seen in the past several years of, you know, just a lot of difficult things coming from people that, on this council. And so the code of ethics is really derived to make sure that everybody feels safe, everybody has the ability to work toward the betterment, toward their convictions, no intimidation, no bullying, no name calling, none of that. And I think this is going to foster a really good work environment for the council and the commissions under us. Is that the heart behind this?
Mm-hmm.
It's not to limit free speech.
That's right.
What I see.
If anybody wants to go on social media and you know, speak on their behalf and say whatever they want, that's their right to do that. But when it comes to the purpose of this council and being able to work, we really want to have a code by which we abide by.
Yes.
And it's not just the Wild West where.
Yes. And we have not had any kind of code or any kind of structure or any kind of.
For any of our boards.
Right.
Not just
council. And this also is for appointed officials as well, which are our boards and commissions. And it's self-policing for each body. And but the goal is to have a set of standards that we are living up to.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not to be like, don't do this, don't do this. There's a lot of, there is some of that, but there's also like, this is aspirational of how we hope that people will
conduct themselves
and behave as a body.
And Councilmember Dressler and Keeston, if I can just point out to number five, since you raised that, there is a distinction between that first and second sentence. And Councilmember Russell, I'll tell you that in the meetings, your exact concern came up that when someone holds a political office of any kind, anywhere, at any level, part of that responsibility is to speak to the constituents. And so I think we took pains not to infringe on that. And if you look closely at number five, council members, right, addressing those of you sitting up here, will consult with city staff before commenting publicly on matters of city concern. The assumption there is that you will
comment publicly on matters of city concern. It's just that there's a request in this code that you do it first. The next sentence goes to what I think you're concerned about. Appointed officials means those folks that you appoint to boards and commissions subordinate to the council shall not comment publicly on the city's behalf. In other words, no one appointed to serve on those boards and commissions has the authority from this council to speak on behalf of the city. That's what that's directed to. That's the distinction between a council member and those who are appointed.
I think that the issue I see is the word consult could be, and here's the difficulty, whenever you're asked to do an interview, you often don't know, you got to have an idea of where it's going to go, but you don't know the different questions you're going to get. And of course, the typical issue is you talk for 30 minutes and they cut out 2 minutes of it and put it on TV. I won't be able to consult on every question that I might get asked.
You could defer. You could defer.
Defer.
You could say, I don't know the answer to that question.
I would refer you to the city staff. And usually I say, it's my opinion on these things.
I know, but I think that's what we're trying to fix here.
I guess the spread of misinformation. That interview that someone did here said it was going to cost $3 million to keep the original family center. And of course, we found out later that number was nowhere close to right.
Well, so, it's a good thing I consulted with city staff on that.
And you got it off by three times as much?
No, that's what I do is I consult with city staff before any interview. This is exactly what this is for.
Three times higher than what we have in the book.
This does not address past behavior, only future behavior after this meeting if it's enacted.
But I just wanted to make sure.
Councilman Russell, all you're doing is picking on the mayor.
I wasn't picking on him.
Yes, you are.
I was factual, giving facts.
But you've already said it three times. That's plenty. And the difference between the word consult and permission is significant. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in here that says you need to ask permission from the city. Consult means that you should try to get from the city the best information you can.
We do that already.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Then it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm saying is I can see this as a tool to try to silence a minority opinion.
In fact, I need to find it, but I made sure that it was included. It's number 10 Code of Ethics adopted. It says the mayor or chairperson shall facilitate discussions to allow both minority, majority, and minority positions to be freely expressed within the framework of an open and respectful discussion. I made sure that was in there because every position matters and needs to be considered and heard publicly. That the heart of this is absolutely free speech in a way that is respectful and doesn't spread misinformation and doesn't...
That word respectful is something that is a two-way street that I think that what one person feels like is respectful, another person might not.
Hearing that can be worked out.
And also I think that you might see times of one person says something, and then whenever they respond, it might not be as respectful. So I guess that's another issue that you kind of see.
We'll see it played out. You can make an accusation, and it can go through the process.
When you first started your conversation, you started with item 4.
Correct.
So, and you mispronounced the word courteously, but do you have some issue with item 4?
No, I think that in the Parks Board meeting, there was, and of course this passed, but that was one of the situations that we were...
Yeah, specifically at the Parks Board meeting. I mean, had this code of ethics been in place prior to that meeting, there were certain violations.
And I guess
at the
section 4, number 2.
I do not want to then... moving forward, if you see it again, you can make the accusation, bring it to Donna, we'll go through the process. I don't think that it's worth, it's like a great use of time right now to look at past things when this was not adopted.
No, I agree completely, and I think this is a fabulous thing to have.
Yeah, and I think it's
absolutely essential.
Would you like to make the motion to adopt it?
Sure.
Before we say it,
I want everyone to have the opportunity to go through and thresh out whatever can be misconstrued.
Yes.
Now, if we're acting as private citizens and doing something, and that's why I suggested the verbiage I did to David.
Yeah.
Shaw. Because
are you taking suggestions for verbiage
changes?
I'm
on number five under section four.
Motion to revise it. We'll take that up.
I just said after the word publicly. In their official capacity. Well, that narrows it down to his capacity as a council member as opposed to a private citizen.
You know, I am so glad you brought that up. I'm actually really glad you brought that up because that's actually been burning on my mind. When somebody gets up to talk, how can they identify themselves as, I'm not a council person, I'm a private citizen? How does that work in city business talk? Oh. Is there a possibility to distinguish,
or
is it not really possible?
I can give you an excellent.
I'm asking, like, if somebody comes up and says, "I'm not a council person. I'm talking as a private citizen." Is that possible?
I will only say that I've reviewed at least one case on point, and I would feel more comfortable discussing this in an executive session.
10-4.
Can I give one great example on that?
I don't think we should discuss this outside of
executive
session.
Well, you brought it up, Mayor.
I just heard that we're not supposed to be discussing.
Consulting.
You say, no. That's called consulting. That's getting the professional's advice. And that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Very easy. He's right there.
And that's
very
easy.
You are more than welcome to say that you do not want to adopt this as presented. That is your vote.
I want to adopt it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But we're talking about an issue and the mayor shuts me down.
This is not helpful. Everybody's out of order. Like, this is what we're voting on. This is what we're here for. Let's bring it back here. So if you would like to make the motion, but then say as... But amending four, five.
No.
To okay.
No, I'm so sorry. That needs to be discussed in executive session first because that refers back to my point about the distinction.
Okay.
In acting in city business.
I see your face.
Can somebody switch between private citizen and council person?
Okay.
So. That really needs to be hashed out. But we can revise an ordinance at a later time, right?
Well, this is passed by resolution, not ordinance.
10-4. Okay, I understand.
I just wanted to make a statement, and I think Mr. Shaw can agree to it, that I think one of our first conversations was about something very similar to this. And you were saying, boy, we really need to have the council police themselves. And I remember we talked a great deal. And I talked with the city attorney before about the similar situation. This has been a concern for a while. And I do support, there might be some issues and it might get abused. That's one of the things we're worried about.
That's my deepest fears.
Yeah,
honestly,
but so far as the idea of a code of ethics, the idea is perfect, just as long as it doesn't get abused. So, but I just wanted to remind you about our conversation we had.
Councilman, would you like to make the motion? Would you like to
make me?
Resolution. You read it off of that.
I'll make a motion to adopt Resolution R-2509, adopting a code of ethics for elected and appointed officials, code of ethics for members of the City Council and of the city's boards and commissions.
I'll second that motion. Call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, please say nay. The ayes have it. The motion carries unanimously. This code of ethics is adopted by Resolution R-2509. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to item number 13. This is the introduction of the proposed 25-26 annual budget. Over to you, Mrs. Hernandez. Good evening.
Are you ready for me?
Are you sleepy?
I'm awake. You know, I used to work in public accounting, and we had busy season, so this is giving me great flashbacks.
Sorry, just 1 second.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Shaw, this resolution that we just passed takes effect immediately, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you.
I'm the last presentation of the evening. There is still the consent agenda, but if you would give me about 15 minutes of your time, we'll go over a high-level overview of the proposed budget. So sitting in front of each of you is a preliminary proposed budget using the preliminary tax rolls that were provided in April. This is the first time you are seeing this, but I prepared about 20 slides to go over. So we're going to go over major budget items, look at the funds, departmental increases over 10%, capital projects requested, tax rate options, and operating budgets. So here's my disclaimer. This budget includes estimates that are subject to changes based on the certified tax rolls, city council direction, third-party charges, and other miscellaneous items that may arise. The biggest change will be from the certified tax rolls that will come out on July 25th. I prepared this presentation and budget based on information I knew as of 6:30, and 14 days into July, I've already had estimates change. So I will discuss those throughout the presentation, but the main point is that these numbers are fluid and subject to change, so don't get too concerned. We can adjust as y'all would like. So first thing first, major budget items, the tax rate. Based on the preliminary tax rolls, the estimated tax rate are as follows. The no new revenue rate is estimated at approximately 34 cents. No new revenue means how it sounds, the rate that would produce the same amount of taxes if applied to the same properties taxed in both years. The de minimis rate is estimated at approximately 36.7 cents. This is the rate equal to the sum of the no new revenue rate plus 500,000. There's a few cities within McLennan County that adopt this rate. This is a special rate available for cities with populations less than 30,000. And then the voter approval tax rate is estimated at approximately 40 cents. This is the highest tax rate that a taxing unit may adopt without holding an election to seek voter approval of that rate. So for purposes of what this budget that I prepared, I move forward with the no new revenue rate, which was adopted last year. As far as employee pay is concerned, there are no changes to employee compensation when it comes to merit, certificate, longevity pay. However, the cost of living adjustment included in this budget is 2%, which is down from last year's 5%, and all that is tied to inflation numbers. As far as full-time equivalents requested, Woodway Family Center has requested 2 part-time recreation leads to assist with scheduling and programming. This request does not add any FTEs as there were 2 part-time positions vacant within the Community Services Department already, so I simply transferred this to the Family Center Department. The next item impacting the structure of the general fund's FTEs is my department in the finance. I included a restructure as my payroll and accounting specialist has announced her retirement, and I would like to reclass this position starting in March to an assistant finance director role to meet departmental needs. And again, this doesn't add any number of employees to the general fund. However, the pavilion did ask for one part-time program coordinator to assist with scheduling and the reopening of Whitehall Center for rentals. Next, debt payments, principal payments for utility debt total $1.25 million and are paid out of charges for services. The general obligation principal debt payment is $185,000 for the current year and is paid out of the interest and seeking portion of the tax rate that is estimated at 1.7 cents. And the good news is next month we are making our final payment for the pavilion debt that was issued back in 2011. As far as insurance is concerned, insurance and property and liability and health insurance costs make up about 10% of general fund budget. So having those numbers and the expected increase is significant at this point. Property and liability is estimated at 5% and health is at 7%. Since I drafted this, property and liability came in at 15%, but that's the small numbers. The health insurance, good news, came in at 6.5%. So I'll get those adjusted in the second draft. As far as tourism, best way to think about tourism is the number 7. It's the 7% hotel occupancy tax on the 7 hotels that we have within the city, of which we are required to spend 1/7 on advertising and promotion to drive tourism to this area and put heads in beds. The good news is, I mentioned, we're paying off that debt next month. The bad news is, if you were at my last quarterly presentation, our revenue is coming in under budget and is projecting to trickle into next year, which is concerning as this tourism funds the Carling Bright Arboretum and the Pavilion departments. So the next slide is an overview of all the budgets, big picture. This is what it includes. There's 33 total funds included in the budget presented before you. That's one more than last year. The one additional fund is a result of the most recent Texas legislation that there was an additional municipal court fee fund that Malia and I had to incorporate, actually effective in May. So we already have that going. But it's a special revenue fund. It's small. It doesn't have a major impact here. But the funds that you're most familiar with are the first six listed, the general, utilities, sanitation, Carling Bright operations, tourism, and debt services. Those are the funds that I present to on a quarterly basis. The other funds are the designated special revenue funds that are restricted, and then equipment replacement as well as capital funds. On the next slide, this is what I consider our operations. These are all our departments listed, and with the increases in insurance anticipated as well as the 2% COLA, I do expect an increase within each department, but any increase that was over 10% plus or minus, I went ahead and included in a separate slide so we can go through individually. So first thing first is the non-departmental department, which is a tongue twister there, but this includes expenditures that support various general fund departments and or city council related items. So the total dollar increase here is $52,727 or 21.59%. This increase relates to a domain control server replacement, the addition of a school and conference budget for city council training, a subscription to social media archiving software, and a transfer to the Carling Bright Pavilion Operations Fund. This transfer is calculated as 5% of the Pavilion Carling Bright Arboretum Operations budget to account for the work the Discover Woodway team does for our social media and events that are paid through the general fund, such as Cops and Kids, Movie Night, Sock Hop, Employee Banquet. This increase is slightly offset by a decrease of contingency that aligns with historic usage. Next is the Woodway Family Center. As previously mentioned, they requested two part-time recreation leads. That's incorporated into this budget. There's a quest of a $5,000 increase in community programs, as well as a $26,000 increase related to the Civic Rare software that Jimmy mentioned in his presentation earlier in the night. This will assist the Woodway Family Center go paperless, and it'll help with registration, facility management, online payments, and reporting. Next is community programs. This is going down 10%. Community programs is the name of the department, but it's really the money that's used to mow the 84 corridor. So his average cost for the last 4 years is about $35,000. The budget was $50,000, so I'm just decreasing it to a line. And it could be decreased $5,000 more, but I'd rather give Jack some room there. And then next is sanitation. All right, this is the one I'm going to read because the numbers have changed since I made this slideshow, so do not be alarmed.
Too late.
It's coming. It just might not be this year. Sanitation expenditures in this budget draft increased $218,000, or 11.26%, due to the anticipation rise in landfill costs from the city of Waco, which were forewarned could increase 160%, or $440,000 per year. This was offset by the removal of the general fund transfer that's historically been about $250,000 to $300,000. The landfill increase combined with the annual increase from Frontier results in an estimated 22% increase in sanitation rates for fiscal year 26. I did not have this number in writing, so I left a disclaimer in the budget book in front of y'all on page 43 that says, please note that the city of Waco has not provided the estimated increase in a formal letter, and this amount is subject to change. Well, I got that letter July 11th. So do not be alarmed. This was on Friday. And the budget had already been... I got the letter, the budget had already been created. The increase in the landfill was not as daunting as originally estimated, increasing only 4% or $11,000. However, the letter notes this rate shall be effective for up to a period of 1 year ending August 31st, 2026, or until the current landfill ceases operation and the City of Waco's landfill activities are fully transitioned to the new landfill, whichever occurs first. So I'll meet with city management. We're meeting with our third-party provider to discuss what the impact will be when I come up again.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yes, sir.
4% increase for now.
For now.
Versus?
Versus 160%
yeah,
that I was.
Big difference.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Until the new landfill comes online.
Yes, sir.
Which we don't know.
Which they have not given a firm date on.
I see.
I will say they've been talking about it for years since I started working here.
No, definitely, definitely.
But it was the first time I was given a number this year.
Gotcha. Okay. So our budget packets will be adjusted for the 4% for the 4% increase.
It will be. Yes.
Okay.
There will be discussions on how much of that increase will include, but I don't know when the landfill will be fully operational.
I don't know either, but
sure.
Since we're doing this now,
sure.
Maybe we can, I don't know, lock in 4% for now and then see when that landfill comes online, because, yeah, that's way too much.
I'm sure it's what WICO would decide, being
yep.
We're using their services.
Yep, so it's either coming now or it's coming next year. So I'll work with the city manager as well as city WICO personnel and then with Frontier to see what that impact will be.
All right.
But yes, in here I note so that I will adjust when I create the second draft, because I didn't know this letter when I created this.
No, I just
perfect.
I feel a lot better.
Okay, I feel better too. Don't worry. I was stressing.
$410,000 extra.
Yes, sir. Okay, the next department and the last department I will go over is the pavilion. They did request one part-time employee to assist with the programming. As Lindsay mentioned in her presentation, they have a lot going on over there. And then with the opening of the White House Center, again, for rentals, they'll need an extra set of hands. And then there is also an increase in insurance costs. I base the insurance estimate on who's been enrolled the year before and in the past. Not all the staff over there were enrolled, and now they are, and that's their right as an employee, but I have to reflect that in the budget. So
this is health insurance, not
yes, sir.
Property.
Yes, sir, health insurance. Next, our capital outlay requests that were received by staff and the Parks and Recreation Board. I'll just go ahead and list it. I'm not going to read them all out for the sake of your time. But this begins on page 59 of the budget book. The total dollar impact of the governmental fund capital outlay is $1,859,825. And for utilities, the new money requested is $1.16 million. There are funds available to cover all the equipment replacement, which are the top, the routine, police replacement, as well as utility truck, all that. And there are enough resources available to cover utility costs. However, for the governmental new projects, there is a shortfall of approximately $1 million in the general capital replacement fund. However, there are long-term capital project funds that can be transferred to finance all these projects, which I included in the budget to make it balance. We can talk about that later. Next, tax revenue, what y'all care about? Let's go. In preparations budget, as I mentioned, I use the no new revenue rate based on the preliminary tax rolls. If you take out the exemption, you have your net taxable value. You divide that by 100 and you multiply by the no new revenue rate. It shows you the revenue from the tax roll anticipated for the year. And I'm not going to budget historically 100%. We do write about 99%. So these are the total funds available that will be distributed. M&O, which is funds the general fund and future street improvements, and then INS. I also went ahead and calculated what the impact would be at the no new revenue rate, the city's portion of the property tax, for the average house, which is at $425,509. Same formula, divided by 100. Multiply by the 34,193.1 cents. That results in the city's portion of the property tax for the average tax homeowner being $1,455 or about $121 a month. Now, this only includes the city's portion, not Waco ISD, Midway, the county, or MCC, but I thought it was important to put a visual to the number.
If I'm not mistaken, it looks like that's a little less than last year because of the new homes coming online. Does that sound right to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Which brings up a great point. Thank you, Councilman Russell. So this is a slide for the historical tax rate. There is a list of this included in your budget, but I thought it was great to put a visual. So in the past, the tax rate has been right at 47, 45 cents. This drop here is when council elected the no new revenue rate and began offering the homestead exemption. And in, this would be the fourth year in a row that the no new revenue rate is adopted if this is how we proceed at the end of August. I mean, that's the conversation happening later. But when the tax rate was 45, 47 cents, the city was able to use the maintenance and operation budget to finance the general fund and still allocate 4.5 cents to future street improvement and 1.5 cents to long-term capital project. However, as the tax rate continues to decrease, it is worth examining the impact this tax rate and allocation has on the general fund. So the next slide shows the general fund tax rate allocation from just the last 5 years, which is right when we started adopting the no new revenue rate. So since fiscal year 22, the general fund tax rate allocation has gone down approximately 27% and is down 5% in estimates from 25 to 26. However, if taxable value continues to increase and costs have been cut, we've still been able to adopt the no new revenue rate. And as Councilman Russell alluded to, the no new revenue rate with the same allocation of street improvements would result in a decrease in property tax available to the general fund, which is about a 1% decrease dollar-wise. Meanwhile, the expenditures are projected to increase 5% for general fund expenditures. Now, there are a few drops here, which I can explain. Fiscal year 23, that's when we moved the sanitation fund out of the general fund. Between fiscal year 24 and 25, that's when we moved the pavilion and the arboretum out of the general fund, and that's when public safety removed those three officer positions as Midway ISD created their own police force. So that's where it dropped. But just including the increases with insurance, cost of living, we're projected to have a cost increase of $831,000, or approximately 5%. So my point is, I don't believe we can continue to adopt the no new revenue rate and allocate funds to future street improvement and long-term capital projects. Back when the tax rate was 45, 47 cents, it was doable. But at this pace, the cost is not as sustainable. I'm not suggesting we raise taxes. I'm simply providing the information and suggesting we revisit the allocation of the M&O rate, which leads to the next slide going through each operating budget. So for the general fund purposes, the budget revenues are $11.9 million, budget expenditures $12.7 million. This is an overage of $766,000. Now, excuse me, we have to adopt a balanced budget. The great thing about the general fund is there is fund balance. So revenues plus fund balance equal expenditures, we're good. We have an unassigned fund balance of approximately $3.5 million in the general fund. So that's an option if we go with a no new revenue rate. There's also an option to allocate more money out of the M&O, to not go with the no new revenue rate, or cut costs. That is ultimately up to y'all. I'm just providing the information. Utility fund is a balanced budget. Revenues equal expenses. I do not have any recommended water or sewer rate increases at this time.
Love that.
Yeah.
Amen.
Sanitation fund, this is the one I mentioned. It is a balanced budget. I do need to incorporate the changes now that I have more information, but I will bring that back to y'all at a later time. And the last one is the Carling Bright Arboretum and Pavilion. At this point in time, it is not a balanced budget. And unfortunately, there is no fund balance for the Carling Bright Pavilion since we carved it out of the general fund. There's nothing to pull out of. So
we can't use hot money for that?
The hot money's
already in it.
Hot money's already in it, and then the revenues are down.
Yeah. That's the problem with the hotels not at capacity as they once was.
Yes, sir. So the overage is due to decreases in event revenue and tourism fund, which was worsened by the cost increase for insurance and staffing needs. Options here are supplement with a general fund transfer, cut costs, or somehow generate more revenue.
Now, you said general fund transfer, which makes sense. What's the other one?
Cut costs.
Okay, but aren't we adding an employee on that one, or is that correct?
At this point in time, yes, sir, they did request, and I just incorporated what their request was.
Yeah, so we're adding a part-time employee, and we're budgets more than revenue. So, I mean, I understand it's probably
convert money from the general revenue to that to balance it out.
That's the directive you are given, and I'll move forward with that. So this was my best effort to summarize a 99-page document into 20 slides. I do aware it's, I am aware that it is 9 p.m., so I want to be respectful to each of your time. I know this is the first time you are seeing this information, so please take time to digest it, review the budget books I presented before you. I will post it on the city's website first thing in the morning.
Thank you.
And I will also prepare an updated draft once I receive those certified tax rolls. Later this month, so please email the city manager if you have any question. I think the biggest thing, information I need to get the second draft is the, we can talk later about tax rate, what to do with the old family center, because at this point, there is nothing in the new budget related to the old family center, whether we keep it, whether we tear it down, whether we use it for something else. There's nothing in the current budget related to the old family center. We don't have to make decisions or direction tonight, but.
No, I know. Just to clarify, the number that should keep us up is that 766, 476 overage.
At this point in time, yes, sir.
Plus the Arboretum Pavilion amount, or is that included in the
overage? That does not include the Arboretum Pavilion amount. But this did include the taking away the $200,000 revenue that we've historically transferred from sanitation to revenue to general fund with the landfill.
This will all be impacted.
Once I incorporate the new information into the budget.
But it ain't going to come down 766.
No, it might lower it to $500,000, because that's what the historic transfer has been, about 250 to 300,000.
Plus the Arboretum.
Plus the Arboretum, yes, sir. And that's all I have. Clear as mud.
You're doing great. Great job.
Thank you.
Brenda, very clear. Really appreciate it. We'll be talking soon.
Yes, sir.
Council, that was the introduction of the budget that we just heard. Now we're discussing and considering action on setting the date, time, and place to conduct the required public hearing on the proposed 25-26 annual budget. Can I get a motion to discuss, please?
I make a motion to discuss.
I'll second.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. Mr. City Manager, looks like you're recommending August 25th. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
August 25th, so that's like the second council meeting in August. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is everybody good with that?
Fine.
Yeah.
That gives us a chance to review the certified rolls, see the new budget with the landfill stuff out. We good?
Yeah.
On that? All right. Motion to approve, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Thank you. I'll now call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, please say nay. Ayes have it. Motion carries unanimously. We'll set the budget public hearing on August 25th. At 5:30 p.m. or thereabouts for the council meeting. All right, moving on to the consent agenda. Council, items 15A, B, C, and D are in front of you. Are there any items that you'd like removed for separate discussion?
Yes, I need to pull out A for a correction to the minutes.
15 Alpha?
Yes.
Okay, we're pulling out 15 Alpha. Is everything else good?
If we can. B and D, just a Reader's Digest version of this. A citizen that braved this time frame was asking about it beforehand, and I think she kind of wants a little information about it.
Okay, so we're pulling
off. I'm okay with it, but I just want to get her answer.
So you want to pull off 15B and D?
B and D.
All right.
Just for a little bit more information other than what was in the packet.
Okay, so the only item on the consent agenda is 15C. Do I have a motion to approve item 15C?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Yeah. Moved and seconded, thank you. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Item 15C is approved by unanimous vote. All right, Ms. Barkley, 15 Alpha, please. Discussion and consider action on minutes of the regular city council meeting held June 9th, 2025 at 5:30 p.m. Motion to discuss.
I'll make a motion to discuss.
Moved and seconded. Thank you. Mr. Suri.
Just a small thing. It's just a basically a grammar issue. At the very end, under council reports, Councilman Whitby's comment about the Parks and Rec Commission, it should be raise, R-A-Z-E, instead of R-A-I-S-E.
Oh.
There is a difference.
Good catch. You must have been a journalist or something.
It's a good catch.
I love it.
Yeah.
Eagle eyes, sir.
All right, I must say Jennifer actually saw that too. I'm not the only one.
Okay, we'll make that one correction. Do we need a approval on that, on the minutes? We do.
No.
Okay.
I move that we approve the amended minutes from the last meeting.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, please say nay. Ayes have it. 15A is approved with the amendment to the minutes on June 9th. All right. 15 Bravo, please.
One of our citizens was asking about us.
I was going to open it up first, Dave, if that's okay. And you had to pick the longest one for me to read. So here we go. Discussion and consider action on abandoning the city's waterline and ingress egress utility easement on property originally described as a 232.78 acre tract of land conveyed to Bowers Development Company Incorporated and Dan F. Parman, indeed, recorded in volume 1511, page 26. Of the deed records of McLennan County, Texas, said easement being recorded in volume 1643, page 798 of the deed records of McLennan County, Texas, and further described in Exhibit A and Exhibit B as indicated as a 15-foot wide waterline ingress egress utility easement in the survey, and authorizing the city manager to execute any and all documents in connection therewith. Motion to discuss, please.
I'll make a motion to discuss.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. Mr. Russell.
One of our citizens was asking about this, and I gave her what I thought it might be, but there again, to make sure we get things right, we wanted to consult with this city staff.
Right. Okay, I'm up. So
maybe a Reader's Digest version.
The Reader's Digest version. Councilmember Russell and all council members, Mayor, there are three separate graphics in here. This shows the tract of land in question. As you can see, there's several different colors. So the first one has a piece of the survey in the top left corner. This shows, so the one that you, I don't have my pointer, but.
Yeah, it's there. Ready.
I thought this was a pen somebody left.
Nope.
Excuse me. Okay.
Fancy.
So what concerns us is this middle section here. And as we move through the other two sheets, is what it does, it shows, you've got the green line here, which is a private easement. This is the boundary. So all the blue, this whole area here. The landowner has contacted the gentleman or lady, I don't know what it is, that had this private easement. That easement, if you'll see on the next slide, has been abandoned, leaving only this red portion here, which the red portion follows the old path of the private easement, and it comes down here, and that's a lift station.
So, I was going to ask if we had any lift stations or pump stations that we were abandoning and how that would affect any future.
Yes, sir. So it's a waterline easement. We're not going to put water near sewer. And there is still an easement for the city that follows down this street here. Difficult to see the name, and it still connects here. So
I think
the city
path,
still has...
Okay.
This access point easement following here, it just abandons this piece because there are no utilities in this area, and there's none in the foreseeable future as the topography. It's hard to tell from this photo, but this topography, this terrain is pretty adversarial too. The sewer line here is actually partially exposed. There's just no way to get it any deeper than it is, and from here, once it reaches here, it pumps back up and comes out this way, and is gravity fed the rest of the time. So basically, believe it or not, that's the shortest version I could tell you, but it just removes this piece right here.
My answer was, evidently we didn't need it anymore, and we're abandoning it, so.
Correct. Well, we don't have anything out there. We haven't in 30 or 40 years, and yeah. We don't foresee in the, as you can see, here's the development all around. That's the lake,
yeah.
The water, so that's, nothing will be developed out here.
Probably in floodplain
and
right
any,
there.
Any connections we have, if this portion were to be developed in the future, you have the easement connection, you could bring it down the rest of the way or take it really any number of ways, but as of right now, the water caps are here and here.
Okay.
So,
great. I think it answers your question, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I just saw water.
Well, I just want to make sure you got the right answer.
Yeah.
All right. Note to self, anytime we talk about water, Erica is going to be here.
I love it.
I'm ready to make a motion to approve.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Like to make a motion to approve 15B.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All righty. Motion carries unanimously. 15B is approved. All right, and you wanted 15D also?
Yes, she was asking about that.
So 15D, this is the
on. Let me do this the right way. Yeah, I know. We're all trying to get out of here. I know.
Yeah.
15D, discussion and consider action on resolution R2511, suspending the July 31st, 25 effective date of Encore Electric Delivery Company's requested rate change to permit the city time to study the request and to establish reasonable rates, approving cooperation with the steering committee of cities served by Encore to hire legal and consulting services and to negotiate with the company and direct any necessary litigation and appeal. Motion to discuss, please.
I'll make a motion to discuss.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So they have some actual numbers in here, approximately $834 million. Essentially, this is the number they are saying. This is what our cost of services, this is the raise we need to give our company, give ourselves to make our operations work. This is something we do every year. We've done it with Encore. We do it with Atmos. There's another entity. And what happens is the city is contracted with a legal firm that represents a group of cities.
Mm-hmm.
So when these companies come before the council and they say, I'm making up numbers, but we want $100 million by this date, it goes through the legal review, it goes through the process, and out of that 100, they may get 75. And then it gets adopted later on. It's a lengthy process, but it's something I think you're all familiar with. It's pretty standard procedure.
I think that's how I explained it.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we got it right. Okay, I'm ready to make a motion if everybody else is ready.
Is there any question? Anybody? Good. All right, go ahead, Mr. Russell.
I'll make a motion to approve 15D.
Second.
Second.
Got it. We're all losing it, I know.
It's four.
All right, so it's moved, seconded. What do we do now? We vote on it.
That's
right. Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, please say nay. Ayes have it. 15D is approved. Starting to forget what to do here.
Punchy.
That's just the word I was thinking.
Okay, that's it for the consent agenda. 17, City Manager's Report. Mr. Manager, over to you.
Okay, I'm closing the book over here, and I do actually have. I'll be very, very brief.
Okay.
I have five quick items here. Shout out to Keisha Redden, Executive Assistant to the City Manager, for her Governor's Sustained Excellence Award through the Keep Texas Beautiful organization. Extensive reporting is required, and reports scored over 90 are acknowledged with an award of excellence. When a city has received scores of 90 or above for three or more consecutive years, a Sustained Excellence Award is given. Woodway has received the Sustained Excellence Award for more than 15 years. Congratulations.
Great job, Keisha.
And Jennifer would get on to me if I didn't announce this one. The father and son cookout is July. So I got a thumbs up from her. July 19th, we're serving double R hamburgers. There's going to be a game truck, dodgeball, fire trucks, and more at the Woodway Family Center building from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The next day, July 20th, at the farmer's market, but it'll be indoors this time at the pavilion, and that'll be from 11 to 2. Last but not least, the mayor asked us to organize donation drop sites for citizens that were wanting to donate to the flood relief efforts. Thank you to all the citizens that donated to the flood relief victims and to the first responders in those areas, helping to restore order to chaos. Thank you to the city staff and all departments that came together on no notice to receive truckloads of donations, organize them, make deliveries to designated drop point locations down south. So I do have one quick picture. It was too good not to share.
Oh, but, that's good.
Feel good, end on a high note. And this is what they brought down there doesn't even come close to being reflected in the pictures. And that's loading and unloading on and off of trucks, having to deal with me and everything else that comes into a doing something on the fly when there's no policy, there's no clear written directives on how to do this. So everybody came together. It was the best of everybody, from our citizens to our staff. It went off really well. So thank you.
Amazing. Is that it, Mr. Manager?
Yes, Mayor.
Okay. Great, great job. Thank you so much for those great updates. Item number 18 are the City Council reports. Do we have any updates or briefings from anybody?
I don't have anything.
Nothing?
Nope. No.
Sorry. All right. Councilman Russell, I did want to congratulate you on your not running anymore for Woodway City Council. Off to better and bigger things. I saw that announcement. So I just wanted to congratulate you.
I've been asked to do something pretty large.
Okay.
So great. There will be more information on it soon.
All right. Well, congratulations on your announcement. All right. Well, that's it. Item number 19, consider action on adjournment. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Do I have a second? Seconded. We are adjourned at 9:34 p.m. Thank you all.